Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Harley Carnes. Gas prices are hurting family budgets.
My lease is up next month, and I'm looking to get a smaller car. That's much more cost-effective because of gas prices.
It's a pretty common refrain, and Chrysler has decided to build fewer minivans.
These cuts at Chrysler follow similar cuts at Ford and GM and come as the entire auto industry is facing its lowest sales rate in a decade. Chrysler President Jim Press says the minivans and pickups made at these two St. Louis plants just aren't selling like they used to.
By making these proactive actions and shifting more of our mix towards cars, we're better matching the needs of the market.
This move concentrates Chrysler's minivan production at one plant in Windsor, Ontario. Jeff Gilbert, CBS News, Detroit.
After 17 years in prison for the murders of his parents, Martin Tankleff is fully free now. CBS's Aaron Moriarty led the expose that resulted in his freedom.
The newest piece of information that's in this memorandum today is the Attorney General's office actually says that they have uncovered, this has never been stated before, that they've actually uncovered misconduct on the part of the lead detective on the case.
The New York Attorney General's office said it will drop the old charges. A Saudi man is being charged with organizing and directing the bombing of the USS Cole in 2000. Brigadier General Thomas Hartman.
Five of the eight charges carry the maximum penalty of death. The chief prosecutor has recommended that this case be referred as capital, thereby seeking to bring this as a death penalty case.
17 American sailors were killed by that terror bomb. The rap on Pakistan has been that Al-Qaeda and the Taliban have been given safe refuge in Pakistan. Now there's suspicion because Pakistani troops say they've found little resistance as they have swept through mostly empty militant camps lately. Eight people died when one blast destroyed a camp. Pakistani officials say they didn't do it. It was stored explosives that blew up. New York Times says the U.S. has had a plan for months to send in special forces to root out Al-Qaeda and Taliban in Pakistan, but has not done it for political reasons.
We end up losing these opportunities to capture what are high-value Al-Qaeda sources that potentially are just rearming, refitting, and refueling these units in order to come back and plan attacks on American, perhaps on American soil again.
CBS News military analyst Mike Lyons there. The NTSB is on the case of Flagstaff, Arizona's helicopters midair. Chairman Mark Rosenker.
It's a terrible scene to have to encounter, and I would not wish that on anybody.
Six people on the two choppers died. A seventh, a nurse, is in critical condition. Two people have been taken hostage at the state prison in Maine. The word from the governor's office is inmates with a knife of some kind took the hostages. Negotiations are underway, but limited so far. Wall Street, the Dow gained 3.5 points. NASDAQ down 22. Oil, $140 a barrel. This is CBS News.
Summer's here. It's family vacation time. So before you hit the road, make sure your car is ready at the Sears Summer Travel Sale. Right now at the Sears Auto Center, all tires are on sale. Plus, buy three Goodyear Weather Handler LS, Eagle GTHR, or Wrangler SRA tires and get the fourth free. Get your car serviced 7 days a week, including nights, and shop while you wait. So come into the Sears Auto Center now and get ready to live like it's summer. Sears. Exclusions apply. See store for details. Offer valid 627-08-7508.
As the price of gas continues to rise, so does the number of fuel-saving experts. Look, the guys at Advanced Auto Parts aren't scientists inventing hydrogen engines or cellulosic ethanol. They got their PhDs in parts. Stuff like air filters, fuel filters, spark plugs, fuel system cleaners, and other things that make cars run more efficiently. Look, if you really want to save money on gas, go buy a bike. Otherwise, head on over to Advanced Auto Parts. They'll show you how to get more miles per gallon. Whatever you're working on, Advanced will help you keep the wheels turning.
The Screen Actors Guild and the movie producers are still a twain unmet.
The contract between SAG and Hollywood Studios runs out tonight. Not a year removed from the writer's strike, there are still plenty of nerves here about a what if.
I'm concerned for friends that'll be impacted as well as for the production side of it.
Are you optimistic?
Not yet.
SAG President Alan Rosenberg is trying to calm nerves by saying there isn't even a strike authorization vote just yet, but studios have taken out ads here about the possible damage if there were a strike. Andrew Mullenbeck, CBS News, Los Angeles.
You wouldn't believe what some people can do with their tongue. A new technology out of Georgia Tech, maybe a kind of revolution, a device that connects to the tip of the tongue, can help operate a computer.
When you move your tongue, for example, to a certain tooth, the wheelchair can go faster. When you retract it, it can slow down.
Maysam Govanlu, assistant professor of computer engineering. You can drive your wheelchair with it. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
I have high cholesterol. Now I'm eating well and staying active. Guess what? Walmart is doing their part to lower my numbers, too. I can get up to a 3-month supply of my prescription for just $10. So instead of spending more time picking up my medicine, I spend more time picking up my grandkids.
Hi, Grandma.
The Walmart Pharmacy Prescription Program includes hundreds of popular medicines. A 90-day supply of prescription drugs is now $10. A month's supply is still $4. Save money. Live better. Walmart. Restrictions apply. See Walmart.com or your pharmacist for details.
This 4th of July, your local Sam's Club is bursting with ways to save. Bring forth the flavor at your patriotic party with a barbecue. From grilling essentials like fresh meats and produce to drinks in the grill itself, you'll find the items you need at prices worth celebrating. And if you're not a member, you can start your savings with a bang. Join as a new member on July 1st through 4th, and you'll receive a $10 gift card. Sam's Club, where membership means terrific values this 4th of July and every day.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to the show they named after your humble host. Lots to talk about, plenty of great people to talk with today, and you're included, and you're invited. Call me toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B whenever the urge strikes you. Are you ready? Are you steady? Can we go? Later this hour, we're going to meet a moderate voice for Israel. Jeremy Ben-Ami has formed a new group called J Street, and you can check them out in advance at jstreet.org. And I think that this is a moderate response to the influence of AIPAC in Washington. But we'll find out when we meet Jeremy about a half an hour from now. On the heels of last week's Supreme Court decision saying that the Louisiana death penalty for child rape is unconstitutional, we're going to talk to Judy Benitez in New Orleans at the Louisiana Foundation Against Sexual Assault. They represent victims of sexual assault, and you might be surprised that unlike Barack Obama, they support the Supreme Court's decision in this matter. Also on today's show, today may be the day that U.S.-based multinational oil companies get their dreams fulfilled. Saddam kicked them out of Iraq 30-some years ago, and the Bushies are going to fix it for them. We're going to get comment from Antonia Juhas from the Institute for Policy Studies. She's been following this for several years for us. And as we run into the free speech zone today, we're going to hear from one of those pro-Hillary people who's threatening to vote for John McCain. Will Bauer from a loosely associated group called Puma and Just Say No Deal will be joining us in the free speech zone, and we'll hear what he has to say. It's all ahead here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Again, my toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B, and my email is simple, peter@peterbcollins.com. You know what to do from there. Peter Laufer is a longtime colleague. who occasionally sits in for me on this program, and I return the favor. Just yesterday, I sat in on his Sunday show on Green 960 in San Francisco. Peter, welcome back to our program.
Well, thank you so much, Peter B., and thank you for holding the fort yesterday while I was chasing butterflies.
And were you successful?
In fact, I saw my first California sister in the canyons of the lower, well, I guess it's called the Southern Sierra, just over the lip from the Kern River Valley, and it's quite the colorful butterfly.
Really? And how does it compare to the monarch? I'm not an expert on these things.
Well, I'm not an expert on these things either. I am just learning and just went out for the first time yesterday with these folks who are the equivalent of birders and call themselves butterflyers, and
yeah.
They go out and look at butterflies. They don't stick butterflies in jars of poison and then stick pins in them.
They don't put them in a page of a book and smash them?
They don't put them in a page of a book and smash them. They don't even go after them with nets. They go after them with binoculars and notebooks.
How about digital cameras?
Digital cameras, yes, absolutely.
Uh-huh.
They are quite keen on digital cameras. In fact, to provide proof that they, in fact, saw them and they weren't out swilling whiskey and pretending that they saw California sisters. But it was quite an experience, and I'm learning about them. At one point, one of the experts there said, how can you see them? You don't have any binoculars. And I said, I'm not looking at the butterflies. I'm looking at you guys. But it was gorgeous there, although we were on just the west side of a new fire that broke out, and it was quite hideous to see the sky turn from deep blue to what we're too familiar with these last couple of weeks.
Well, here on Monday, the Bay Area skies have finally cleared. Sunday was okay, but today we seem to be all blue and smoke-free for the first time in about 9 days.
It is gorgeous, but when we came over the top, over the 6,000-foot pass of the Southern Sierra, down toward Cedar Creek, it was just unreal to see the stuff backed up over Bakersfield against the south end of the Central Valley. Just hideous, and the newspapers were screaming about how many times the health hazard the air was unbreathable, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you survived that expedition, and perhaps some of our Pacific Grove listeners would want to reach out to you and invite you to come see the monarch butterflies that are famous and indigenous to Pacific Grove. So you have a website at peterlawfer.com, right?
That's correct. In fact, I am engaged in this research project regarding butterflies, and if somebody knows something I ought to know, thank you for that, Peter B. Peter Laufer, Laufer, at peterlawfer.com. And I know your producer, Katrina Rill, has some experience in this because her father, back in the old country, was quite the scientific, if not amateur, butterfly collector. And that's a common crossover where those who are not particularly trained end up doing scientific work because they become so crazed, if I may, without insulting Katrina's father, about butterflies.
Yeah. Well, that's fascinating. Didn't know that. Peter Laufer is with us. He is co-author of a new book called Hope is a Tattered Flag, Voices of Reason and Change for the Post-Bush Era, co-authored with Marcos Kounalakis, who is a longtime journalist colleague of Peter Laufer's and also the publisher of Washington Monthly Magazine. For people who haven't heard your radio show, which is on XM and many stations across the country, Peter, what do you do there? Is it recipes and funny stories about politicians of today and yesteryear?
We have a great time on that program, Peter B., and what we do is we try to either find people who aren't usually on the radio or those who are often on the radio, but when we talk with them, we hit them sideways and talk about things that they don't expect to talk about, some examples and examples that are in the book, because the book is an anthology. It's a compilation of our conversations with these amazing Americans that are out there, some of whom are famous in terms of your audience knowing their names and some unknowns.
Mm-hmm.
But we get a hold of these guys and ask them the kinds of questions that don't usually come up in the standard talking points. For example, Jason Blair figures in the book. Not only does he not get the usual talking points as questions, nobody's talking to him.
Yeah, Jason Blair is the guy who resigned in disgrace from the New York Times after being exposed as a plagiarist and a fabricator.
Yeah, absolutely, and he figured prominently in an edition of Washington Monthly on the radio that we did about lying. And it was a natural to talk to him. He'd been out of the headlines for a couple of years. And to listen to somebody who destroyed their own career and really understands, even if it is from a psychopathic point of view, what lying is all about, helps put truth into a perspective that we think is valuable. And that's the kind of thing we do with the book.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are a lot of great voices in here. Let me just drop a few names. Congressman Charlie Rangel, Governor Bill Richardson, Drew Weston, who we've talked to a couple of times, who's a very interesting guy from Duke or somewhere in the Carolinas.
Yes, Duke, that's correct.
Ted Sorensen, a longtime presidential historian, Joe Klein, Mike Gravel, who ran for president, Daniel Ellsberg, certainly our listeners know him, Christopher Hayes, who writes for The Nation, and that's one I want to come back to. That was a very interesting interview you did there. Carl Pope of Sierra Club, Bill McKibben, a great voice for environmentalists and organic farmers in this country. And then we get to a couple of people here I have to ask you about. Does Patrick J. Buchanan need any more ink spilled in his in his direction?
Yeah,
I mean, to be fair, you didn't give him a pass. You asked him tough questions. But honestly, I guess I watch too much MSNBC, and you never watch it, Peter. But
that's right.
I'm tired of that guy.
Well, as well you ought to be, and as well everybody ought to be. But nonetheless, I think it is extraordinarily important that those of us who disagree with him engage him, because too often he has arms wrapped around him, or he's just given a free ride. And it's interesting to me to hear you ask that question the way you did, Peter B., because you remember when I had a fling as program director of WRC, the radio station in Washington, D.C. You know, you remember, because you came out and we did some work together.
That's right, yeah.
And the heat that I took putting Patrick J. Buchanan on in the afternoons there was considerable, for the same reasons that you just suggested. But I think to get these guys out there, and I think of them kind of as those blow-up toys that we had as kids that were usually in the shape and the face of a clown, and you hit them and they bounce back again, you hit them and they bounce back again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important to whack at these guys, because whether we whack at them or not, they still bounce back. And particularly now in regards to immigration, the Buchanan, Dobbs, O'Reilly, Troika there.
The nativists, yes.
The nativists.
Let's include Savage, too. He's right up there with them.
Oh, no question. It's not just the three of them. And the problems that they cause by feeding demagogically on those who understandably have some concerns about their own lives, blue-collar folks that are unemployed, the famous Obama types that were talked about at the fundraiser in San Francisco, I think it mandates that we engage the Buchanans.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can understand that. And again, you gave him, I think, an appropriate treatment. And so, you know, if it sells a few books, if people are curious to hear how he responds to you, so much for it.
Well, let me mention something else as you say it sells a few books, because this is something that we try to do with the book, and that is reach across the proverbial aisle. And it's not just to sell a few books, but also to engage readers who otherwise might not be involved in a book that Marcos Kounoulakis and I would write. And the Patrick J. Buchanan conversation gave us entree to Scott O'Connell. Scott O'Connell is the editor of the American Conservative, and if you flip your book over on the back side, you'll see that he wrote a blurb for it.
Mm-hmm.
And to us, and I know to you too, Peter, with your radio show, it's extremely important not to be preaching to the choir. I don't need to talk with you, Peter, about the problems that we have with prisons in California. You've been in the forefront of that for a couple of decades. But if I can talk to a prison guard who hasn't thought it through yet, perhaps, and may then look at his job differently, I figure that's much more important, with all due respect to having you as a listener or a reader.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good point, because I've chafed at the same issue, that I would love to see this program heard on stations where the other hosts are not all in sync with my positions, because I think that that would reach an audience that we could then persuade, as opposed to just shoring up the positions of people who pretty much already agree with us.
Yeah, and it doesn't even have to be as arrogant as we tend to be, thinking that we know everything. If we engage that audience, we may rethink some of our own positions or compromise somewhat on our own positions in order to further policy that is important, even if it isn't exactly what we would design if we had no opposition. And as long as this bifurcated state exists in this country, we're in nothing but trouble.
Yeah. Peter Laufer is with us, co-author of the new book called Hope is a Tattered Flag. These are drawn from interviews on Washington Monthly on the radio. He co-authored it with his colleague Marcos Kounalakis, and it's out in softcover at a reasonable price from Polypoint Press, p3books.com, on the web. We'll continue in a moment with Peter Laufer, and you can join us by telephone. That's how it works here. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. More in a moment. Here on the Peter B. Collins Show. The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli, with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family. Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
The patient's not responding to the treatment.
I know. That imaginary jingle telling him to go where again?
Coffeetopia.
I've seen this condition before. It is very contagious.
What happened?
Nothing really. Everyone had a cup of coffee and a bagel. Speaking of which, let's go have a cup.
Where should we go?
Coffee, coffee, coffee-topia.
What was that?
And so, it begins again.
For the best coffee, tea, or smoothies in the Monterey Bay Area, visit Coffeetopia. With three locations in Santa Cruz, 3701 Portola Drive near Pleasure Point, 1723 Mission Street on the west side, and the newest Coffeetopia at 1443 Capitola Road in the Live Oak area. Coffeetopia is also the oldest internet cafe in Santa Cruz, with wireless and by-the-minute computer stations. Other places use ice as fillers for their smoothies, but not Coffeetopia. They use all fruit and juices when making their delicious smoothies, and they also feature tropical, high-energy, acai smoothies, bagels, and fresh baked goods.
Coffee, coffee, Coffeetopia.
Hi, I'm Ginger.
And I'm Jay. And we would like to personally invite you to experience why Monterey County food critics are raving about our family restaurant, A Pizza Paradise.
Could it be our fantastic, one-of-a-kind specialty pizzas or huge calzones, such as the Jamaican Me Crazy, the White Sands Beach, the Veggin' Out, or the Wild Mushroom Dream?
Or could it be because we also offer delicious salads, sandwiches, rice plates, and irresistible homemade desserts by Ginger?
Recently recognized as Local's Favorite, Best for Families, Most Creative, Big Screen and Big Eat, and will return to spend our own money.
So come relax in our tropical surf-themed restaurant and top off your meal with an ice-cold draft beer from Kona Brewing Company, fresh-brewed Hawaiian coffee, or Lappert's Hawaiian ice cream.
That's A Pizza Paradise, located in the Marina Village Center at 215 Reservation Road in Marina, or call 582-9149 or see us on the web at apizzaparadise.net.
That's A Pizza Paradise.
582-9149.
America, and that they don't necessarily agree with the Bush wrecking crew approach to federal regulation.
Yeah, he is convinced that, in fact, the corporations that you might think are linked directly with the Bush administration, just because of the kinds of prejudices we tend to have, I'm not talking about the Halliburtons, but I'm talking about the blue chips like General Electric and PG&E, Alcoa, these companies, in fact, seek the regulation because it is difficult for them to do business if the parameters are not in place, if they don't know what to expect, if they fear they're going to get blindsided, if there are no rules of the road.
He says to you, CEOs are not ideological creatures by nature. They're interested in profit and power and leverage and risk mitigation and making money. If a carbon tax is going to be the thing that essentially levels the playing field and allows them to amortize costs, capital costs up front, and to go to their shareholders and say, hey, this is the strategy we have, this is going to make us more competitive, then they're perfectly happy for there to be a carbon tax.
Absolutely. That makes sense. And it is one more example of just how out of touch this administration is.
All right, John in Carmel Valley. John, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show with Peter Lauffer.
I heard you mentioning Pat Buchanan earlier, and I decided to call in because today I heard him on Barry Lynn's program, and they were discussing Pat's new book, and the thesis seems to be that Britain made a terrible mistake by declaring war on Germany at the point of Germany's invading Poland, that she should have just sort of contained Germany because Germany was mainly interested in moving east, not west. And it sounds like a lot of off-the-wall stuff, but it is a challenge to conventional thinking, so it'll probably get a lot of commentary because of that.
Yeah,
but he's on every... isn't he just about the most frequent guest outside of when Kissinger used to be doing, or is Kissinger still doing it?
No, we don't see Dr. K much anymore. Go ahead, Peter.
It's interesting, two things about what your caller is suggesting, Peter. One is Nicholson Baker just is out with an intriguing book titled Smoke. It's a nonfiction look at that period of buildup to the Second World War, and it also tends to, at least in my reading, offer a similar thesis, and certainly from a different point of view. The other thing that's important to remember, and I'm sure you remember this from WRC, Peter, and that is that Barry Lynn and Pat Buchanan were teamed for years in the afternoon in Washington, D.C., yelling at each other from left to right and right to left, and so they're old pals. And it's that kind of radio, Peter, that you were mentioning earlier when we were talking, that just doesn't seem to exist much on the air today. What a nice idea to have the two of them on the air at the same time rather than a radio station that's just filled with these right-wing nutcase demagogues like Michael Savage.
Yeah. John, thanks for your call today. Arlene, sorry we didn't get to you. Peter Lauffer, thank you for joining us. The book is Hope is a Tattered Flag. It's out from Polly Point Press, and a lot of fascinating people with their comments on the post-Bush era. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you for drawing attention to this book and for taking care of the radio show yesterday.
My pleasure. We'll talk to you again soon.
Undoubtedly.
Coming up next, we're going to take a look at a new organization out of Washington called J Street. And their focus is on Israel. And from what I can tell, they are less aggressive than AIPAC. We'll find out more from Jeremy Ben-Ami. Coming up next on the Peter B. Collins Show, produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File, sponsored in part by Franklin Templeton Investments. Worldwide investing through the eyes of experience for over 50 years. Franklin Templeton Investments, gained from their perspective. I'm Charles Osgood. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission recently issued a new regulation allowing employers to establish two classes of retirees. Those under 65 years of age can get more comprehensive health benefits than those 65 or older. In fact, under this regulation, for the older group, companies can drop health benefits altogether. The story after this.
The world calls us small business owners, but really,
there's nothing small about us. We have big ideas.
We see huge potential. We have
larger-than-life expectations, which is why we
and millions of other business owners use Visa Business.
Because we do business with a great big world and no other card.
No other card.
No other card is more accepted by it.
Visa Business, used for big ideas. Visit visa.com/smallbusiness.
Look at that.
What?
The Nuvi. This is precisely why I subscribed to MSN Direct when I bought this Garmin Nuvi 780.
What is it?
A traffic backup right there on our route.
What do we do?
We avoid it.
How?
The Nuvi simply directs us to the best alternate route, huh?
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
To receive MSN Direct traffic content, you must be within its coverage area. For details, navigate to Garmin.com. Follow the leader.
There's no federal law that says generally employers have to provide health benefits to any employees, active or retired. Some companies and unions have told the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission that if they had to provide the same benefits to those under 65 and those 65 and older, they'd just drop health benefits altogether. So the commission is saying, okay, you can't treat them differently.
When someone reaches 65, if the employer has to continue to cover them as a retiree and not coordinate with Medicare, it increases their costs hugely.
Helen Darling is president of the National Business Group on Health, which represents large employers. This policy is not something radically different or new, she says.
It's not like it's a negative change. It's been validating what's been going on since 1965.
If companies want to pay for health coverage for all employees and retirees, regardless of age, they can.
As long as they can coordinate with Medicare, which they've been able to do since 1965, if anyone provides retiree medical after retirement, then they might consider continuing to do it.
So, if your company wants to, it can. But now that the rule gives employers specific free rein to use age as a basis for reducing or eliminating health care, you better not count on it.
Almost no employers provide health care coverage anymore after someone retires. So we're talking about a small number of people, except in the public sector, which is huge.
The Osgood File. Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Live. Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. In the next hour, we're going to take a look at the Supreme Court's decision about the death penalty last week. And we're also going to get some expert commentary from Antonia Yuhas on the new oil deal in Iraq, taking care of the same old boy network. A week ago, the New York Times featured a full-page ad that got my attention. The headlines read, "When Israel goes to war, supporters rally. When Israel negotiates, why the deafening silence?" And the ad is attributed to a new group called J Street. And the subhead reads here, "The new address for Middle East peace and security." Well, they got my attention. And whatever that full-page ad cost, well, at least it worked in my case. Joining us now is the executive director of J Street, Jeremy Benamy, spelled B-E-N-A-M-I. Jeremy, welcome to our program today.
Thanks so much, Peter. I really am glad it caught your attention, and I'm happy to be here with you.
Well, I'm interested just in the frame that you offer right here, because let's share our views. And, you know, I'll tell you mine, and you tell me yours, because I want to find out more about J Street and what your views and tactics are. I am a strong supporter of Israel and its right to exist. I also am a strong supporter of Palestinians and others who have been displaced or somehow disadvantaged by Israel's existence, its growth, and some of the moves it's made, including the settlements and the wall that they're building. And so I believe, and I may be deluded, but I believe I take a fairly balanced approach to the issues of Israel. And I believe that the Bush administration has been extremely imbalanced and has really put the U.S. in a position as siding with Israel instead of a power broker position that it used to enjoy. So that's my fundamental view. What's yours?
Well, I think, you know, I personally and J Street as an organization would actually agree with a lot of what you just said. The premise of J Street is that we are an organization that does support the state of Israel. Many of us, like myself, have very close ties to the country, family there, and, you know, a deep sense of desire to help the country and to have it see another 60 years. It just celebrated its 60th anniversary. And our belief is that the single most important thing that can be done to help Israel be secure, to achieve another 60 years, is to reach a peace agreement with its neighbors and to establish fixed, internationally recognized borders that provide both it and the Palestinian people with a stable state that lives side by side with its neighbors in peace and security.
Mm-hmm. And if you could, contrast the attitude and the focus of J Street with that of AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee.
Sure. Well, let me just say at the outset that, you know, we tend to contrast our views with a broader array of groups. We don't necessarily point the finger just at one group, but we really think that for too long, when it comes to Israel and the Middle East, the loudest voices that have dominated the debate have come from the far right. And that's a constellation of forces that includes the neoconservatives who have driven public policy and foreign policy in this country for 7.5 years. It includes the leadership of some of the most right-wing Christian Zionist movements, John Hagee being a prime example,
mm-hmm.
and it includes the right-wing leadership of some of the established American Jewish organizations. And that array of forces together have come to define what it means to be quote-unquote pro-Israel, and they've defined it in a way that is hawkish, that relies on military means to resolve what are really political conflicts. And J Street is an effort to reclaim the middle. and to reclaim what it means to be pro-Israel on behalf of not only American Jews, but our friends who are rational people with a sense of values and a set of principles that lead them to want, as you said, to see two states living side by side, not only because it's the right thing to do, but because it's the smart thing to do. It's the only way that we will get to a peaceful future, not only for Israelis, but for Palestinians and all the residents of the Middle East.
Jeremy, you answered that question very well, and after all, you've worked for President Clinton and Howard Dean, and also you worked at Fenton Communications, one of the progressive PR shops in Washington. So let me come at you from a slightly different angle. Do you believe AIPAC has too much influence on American politicians of both parties?
Well, I think that the forces that provide funding for candidates have too much clout. Let's be clear, AIPAC itself is not a PAC. Despite the name, it cannot endorse candidates. It doesn't fund candidates. There are over 30 pro-Israel, quote-unquote, pro-Israel PACs that provide millions of dollars to political candidates. And there are, you know, hundreds of donors who are associated with many pro-Israel organizations that are seen to be the faces of the pro-Israel community, to elected officials and to candidates. And so that the effect of that has been to lock up the political debate. And the goal of J Street is to demonstrate that there are a very large number, again, of both American Jews and non-Jews who hold a different view. And we want to act as a funnel for their political support and to demonstrate to members of Congress, to senators, to candidates, that there really are people out here who hold these views.
And does J Street include progressive Jews like Michael Lerner, the rabbi and leader of the Tikkun community?
It includes a lot of very progressive Jews who are involved with many organizations, including Americans for Peace Now, Brit Tzedek, Vishalom, Israel Policy Forum, people who are active with Rabbis for Human Rights, and a whole range of organizations. Michael Lerner himself, I believe, is supportive of the effort, although he is not personally involved. We are the only political arm of this movement of people who are both pro-Israel and pro-peace. A lot of the groups, like Tikkun and like Americans for Peace Now and others, are 501c3 charities, and therefore they can't engage in politics and they can't endorse candidates, and there are severe restrictions on their lobbying. We have created in J Street a vehicle that will allow these people as individuals to engage in politics, because we think at root, this is a political problem, not a problem of substance.
And you are then a 501c4, or?
And a PAC. We have two legally independent entities. One is a 501c4, which can lobby.
Right.
There's no restrictions on its ability to lobby. And the other is a political action committee, a federally registered political action committee that can endorse candidates and can fundraise for them.
Jeremy Benamy is our guest here on the Peter B. Collins Show. He's talking about this new, would you call it a think tank, or it's a, what is the correct term?
Well, we are a PAC. We're a political movement, and mm-hmm. One thing we're not actually is a think tank, because we think that there's plenty of think tanks out there that agree with this point of view. There's plenty of scholars and plenty of papers. What there isn't is a political action vehicle, and that's what we are.
So then you're an activist group.
An activist group engaged in the political process.
J Street on the web at J Street, no punctuation in there, just jstreet.org. Now, Jeremy, let me ask you about some of the recent developments. Over the weekend, Israel cut a deal to swap prisoners with Hezbollah. And unfortunately, the Israeli soldiers who were at the conflict that was the start of the 2006 war between Israel and Hezbollah are dead. But their remains will be returned to Israel in exchange for the release of a Lebanese man who is widely regarded to be a remorseless murderer. And so how do you see this as part of the larger process, as the embattled Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, who is barely holding on to his post, seems to be more active in engaging in a process here as his hold on power becomes more tenuous?
Right. Israel seems to be on what the New York Times this morning called a diplomatic offensive, pursuing openings and discussions on a wide range of fronts. You know, that had the ceasefire with Hamas, which you know, with the cause of the ad that you saw, we have, of course, the ongoing discussions with the Palestinians, Abu Mazen, and the Annapolis process. There's been an offer from Israel to talk to Lebanon. There are Syria negotiations happening in Turkey, and now this set of discussions with Hezbollah that has led to the prisoner exchange. So there really is diplomacy breaking out all over. And as a general matter, that's precisely the agenda that J Street is urging, not only for, you know, Israel, but also for the United States. And I think you said at the top of the show, the question really is to what role is most effective for the United States, and is it most effective when it acts as Israel's attorney in these discussions, or is it more effective when it acts as the honest broker? And that's how we've helped reach agreements, whether it's been with Egypt or with Jordan or the Oslo agreements, which ultimately didn't work, but at least were a step in the right direction. All of these happened when you had the U.S. productively at the table as an honest broker and helping the negotiations along. So we are very much in favor of this direction that Ehud Olmert has moved in. There is a legitimate question as to whether or not he has the political strength and half-life left to actually see this through. But it's the right direction, and we should be encouraging it whenever we can.
Now, I've been critical of the Bush administration because in the first year in office, they offered, you know, some tepid approaches to peace between Israel and its neighbors, and then they got all wrapped up in Afghanistan and Iraq, and now they're focused on Iran. And I believe that Israel has been an afterthought for this administration and the neocon thinkers in particular, when it really is at the center of almost every struggle in the Middle East, including our issues with Al-Qaeda.
And what's really interesting is that there is a rumor, let's call it, an urban legend within the Jewish community of the United States that George Bush is, quote-unquote, the best friend that Israel has ever had. And to us at J Street, that is just such a misreading of what really constitutes Israel's interest and what it would constitute for the U.S. to be a friend of Israel, and for it to have been an afterthought for over 6.5 years to engage in active diplomacy and to try to bring the parties to the table is such a misunderstanding and misreading of the entire Middle East situation. And the central role that the Israeli-Palestinian conflict in particular plays in creating an unstable Middle East that leads us to have groups like Al-Qaeda and other, really, you know, the folks who do want to hurt us and who use this conflict as a recruiting tool and run the tapes endlessly of the occupation and the horrors of it, they are missing the point that you can't defend the U.S. interest and you can't promote U.S. interest if you don't engage in peacemaking between Israel and Palestine.
Should we have taken a harder line with Israel in the last 5 years regarding settlements and the construction of the wall?
Well, I think I would separate the two. I think that the settlement issue, you know, we have said what American policy is, and then we don't do anything to enforce it. And the question is, what meaning does American policy have if you simply say, well, we're opposed as a matter of policy to settlement expansion, we're opposed to the illegal outposts? What good is our word, then, if we don't tell Israel they've actually got to do something about it? And it is so critical to the peace process to show something to Abu Mazen and the Palestinians that they actually have achieved something for sitting at the table. It really is against U.S. interests not to be trying to get Israel to live up to its stated public commitments. As far as the wall goes, the problem with the wall is the root of the wall.
Yeah.
You know, the existence of a wall, you know, people do say good fences make good neighbors. And this may well be one of those cases in the world where when you have an internationally established border that is actually agreed to by the parties, it may not be such a bad idea to have a wall. There really is some security to be gained. And the problem with the wall as it exists is that they decided to build it on Palestinian territory and to separate farmers from their olive gardens and to separate people from their schools and their hospitals and their jobs. And that just is simply a not very rational way to pursue your own self-interest. So I wouldn't be, and I don't think J Street would be against a wall that would actually follow a border, but this wall, the way that it has been built, does need to be corrected and moved.
My guest is Jeremy Benamy. He is executive director of a new organization called J Street, on the web at jstreet.org. If you have a question or comment, join me now, toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. More straight ahead on the Peter B. Collins Show. We'll be right back.
Tom Hart, and you're listening to Monterey Bay's Progressive Voice, KRXA 540. Think for yourself.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
At Homescapes Carmel, it's important to us that we appeal to both the senses and the sensibilities of our customers. I'm Thompson Lang, and my brother Beau and I invite you to explore, touch, and discover all the unique items we have at Homescapes in downtown Carmel. For importers like us, nothing beats finding eclectic and worldly things in their native lands and then bringing them home to Carmel by the Sea. Homescapes Carmel is on the corner of 7th and Dolores, and as soon as you walk through the doors, you'll share in the thrill of discovery. We have a wide range of furnishings and accessories that exemplify wabi-sabi, celebrating the beauty, functionality, and morality of living green. At Homescapes Carmel, we're dedicated to our customers, to our employees, and to our community. We look forward to working with you to make your home the perfect blend of comfort, beauty, and individuality. Please stop by Homescapes Carmel on 7th and Dolores. We are open 7 days a week from 10 to 6. You can call us at 831-624-6499 or check us out at homescapescarmel.com.
Come here, Max. What's wrong?
Ruff.
What?
Ruff.
Oh, I get it. A rough day?
Ruff, ruff.
Hi, I'm Dr. Annetta Richmond inviting you to Natural Veterinary Therapy in Pacific Grove, the peninsula's new holistic veterinary medicine clinic featuring a wide variety of natural treatments and remedies for common ailments. We also specialize in acupuncture, chiropractic, and physical rehabilitation using an underwater treadmill. Natural Veterinary Therapy, Lighthouse Avenue between 14th and 15th in Pacific Grove. Our environment is unique. Clients comment on how calm and caring it is for their pets and themselves. At Natural Veterinary Therapy, our goal is to help your pet heal from within. So think for yourself and think for your pets. Visit our website at naturalveterinarytherapy.com or call 655-0501. That's 655-0501.
Meow.
Whiskers, I'd better call Dr. Richmond for you, too.
Of Israel in this country, but they're different from some of the others, and you're hearing the difference with Jeremy Benamy. He's executive director of the new activist group called J Street. They're an activist organization that's under the government rules of 501c4, so they're able to offer opinions and advocate for certain positions. And then, as he explained to us, they have a political action committee so they can support candidates who reflect and values. Jeremy, on May 22nd at Princeton, Chris Hedges gave a talk, and I'm not clear, somebody sent it to me in an email, I'm not sure if this was a commencement address or just a speech to a group, but Chris Hedges is a highly respected former Middle East bureau chief for the New York Times, and he's written numerous books and appeared on our program in the past. And let me just read you two quick paragraphs here and get your reaction. His speech called for a declaration of independence by the United States from Israel. He says, Israel's currently lobbying the U.S. to launch aerial strikes on Iran, despite the debacle in Lebanon. Israel's iron determination to forcibly prevent a nuclear Iran makes it probable that before the end of the Bush administration, an attack on Iran will take place. The efforts to halt nuclear development through diplomatic means have failed. It does not matter that Iran poses no threat to the United States. It doesn't matter that it does not even pose a threat to Israel, which has several hundred nuclear weapons in its arsenal. It matters only that Israel demands total total military domination of the Middle East. The alliance between Israel and the U.S. has culminated after 50 years of direct U.S. military involvement in the Mideast. This involvement, which is not furthering American interests, is unleashing a geopolitical nightmare. American soldiers and Marines are dying in droves in a useless war. The impotence of the United States in the face of Israeli pressure is complete. The White House and the Congress have become, for perhaps the first time, a direct extension of Israeli interests. There is no longer any debate within the United States. This is evidenced by the obsequious nods to Israel by all current presidential candidates, with the exception of Denis Kucinich. The political cost for those who challenge Israel is too high. What's your reaction, Jeremy, to these comments from Chris Hedges?
Well, you know, I have several reactions to what Chris said, and also, you know, there's others out there who've been taking this line recently. And I think that it is a very, very important note of caution to all of those who do care about Israel and who do care about the America-Israel relationship, that we can overplay our hand in this country, and that I think that we run the risk, in the long term, of lobbying too hard, of pressing too far, of asking too much, is that we do lead to this kind of a bounce back against the very relationship we're trying to help. And so my reaction on the one hand is that I would disagree, of course, with Chris about whether or not in toto the relationship between Israel and the United States is or has to be a strategic liability for the United States. Obviously, you know, I believe very strongly that there is the need for and there can be a very productive U.S.-Israel relationship. But I would agree with him that I think that the way in which the political process has been closed down in this country has, in fact, stifled debate. It has stifled discussion of what exactly it means to be pro-Israel and whether or not a thoughtlessly militaristic right-wing ideology is actually the best way to express one's love of Israel and one's desire to have a close relationship. And until we change that political dynamic and open up discussion and open up debate a bit, we run the risk of what I think the direction that Chris is leading us towards.
And Seymour Hersh over the weekend released a new article in The New Yorker, and I haven't read the whole thing, but the part I did read, he states that Democratic leaders have provided, in agreement with the Bush administration and Republicans in Congress, about $400 million for war planning against Iran. And I'm very concerned that this is going to move forward with some sort of provocation that will be created or reacted to. And I am very concerned that such an assault not only would be very costly in multiple respects to the United States, but would not serve the best interest of Israel. And this is a case where I think that this dominance that Israel has over the American political process could redound in a very negative way to its own interests.
And I would agree with that. I would put out a couple of quick comments, though, to just make sure that our opinion is clear. I think there has to be some acknowledgement at the beginning of any conversation about Iran that, in fact, the president of Iran, Ahmadinejad, is a tyrant and is somebody who is posing a threat to not only Israel but to the region and to the stability of the Middle East. And he is somebody who needs to be addressed and who needs to be contained.
But he's not really. Saying, he's also not really in charge there.
Right. That's why I've said him. I haven't said the government of Iran.
Right.
I haven't
uh-huh.
said the country of Iran. But
yeah, you didn't refer them to them as a regime, and I appreciate that.
Right. No, I think it's really important to draw that distinction, and I think that it's part of the problem with an unsophisticated foreign policy that really just has a filter of good versus evil in the world, and you're either with us or you're against us. It's the lack of sophistication to be able to parse the situation and to say, there are opportunities here, there are divisions, there are ways for us to approach, the new Speaker of the Parliament in Iran or the Supreme Leader Khamenei or others within Iran and make real constructive, proactive offers of ways in which the United States could talk Iran off of this ledge. I mean, the spread of nuclear weapons, the spread of nuclear technology is in nobody's interest. We can't deny that. It is a very strong U.S. interest to make sure that Iran does not get a nuclear weapon. The one thing we know is that the current track isn't working. The more that we squeeze, the more that we rattle the saber, the more that we unite the world to simply oppose Iran, the more that they simply pursue a nuclear weapon. So this strategy strategy isn't working. While I agree there's a threat, I think there's a different strategy, and that strategy is in the best interest of the United States. It can be in the best interest of Israel, and that's to find a way to talk them off the ledge that they put themselves on.
Jeremy, our time is up, but I've enjoyed meeting you, and I look forward to talking with you again.
Great. I really appreciate it, and I appreciate your reference to our website at jstreet.org for people to find out more about what we're trying to do.
Jeremy Ben-Ami, Executive Director of J Street. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll continue after a break here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
We're talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, you started the company more than 30 years ago, and was it partly because you were getting headaches from wine?
Absolutely. I'm an extremely chemically sensitive person. There were no wines, no conventionally grown wines that I could really drink and enjoy until I accidentally tasted my grandfather's wine and discovered to my extreme surprise that I could drink those wines without getting headaches. More and more people suffer the results of the accumulation of toxic substances in our environment, and our tolerance is getting really strained, and therefore it takes a very little amount of a toxic substance for them to start have an unpleasant experience.
Learn more about the Organic Wine Company on the web at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE. Toll free, that's 1-888-ECO-WINE. Tell them Peter B. sent you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Gasoline prices keep rising.
Today, the national average has set a new record.
And auto sales keep falling.
The ubiquitous minivan, even that is now starting to be affected, according to Chrysler.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney.
I'm appalled at how expensive gas is.
Mike in New York is not alone. Every stop at the gas station brings a new shock. This week, AAA pegs the national average for regular at $4.09. The Lundberg survey says $4.10. Either way, we're paying way more than ever before.
We are talking about gasoline prices nearly 40% more than what we were seeing this time last year. And 34 states in the District of Columbia are at or above $4 a gallon.
AAA's Troy Green says it's having a real impact on the Great American Road Trip.
This is the first time this decade, we're talking about the 2000s, where we have projected a decrease in Memorial Day and now 4th of July holiday travel.
And automakers project falling sales. Chrysler has announced plans to eliminate a shift at its St. Louis North plant, which makes full-size pickups, and to shut down its St. Louis South minivan plant.
These are just the latest of production cutbacks where Chrysler anticipates continual slowness of sales of certain models. First it was pickup trucks, then it was SUVs. Now it appears that Chrysler anticipates a slowdown in the sales of their minivans.
Keith Crane of Automotive News. Those numbers at the pump really add up. Listen to Tom Cloza of the Oil Price Information Service.
It's going to be the first month that we've ever spent probably $50 billion on gasoline in this country. 6 years ago, we spent about $17 billion. It certainly puts a hurting on the economy.
Crude oil today topped $143 a barrel before settling in New York at $140. Now this.
This 4th of July, your local Sam's Club is bursting with ways to save. Bring forth the flavor at your patriotic party with a barbecue. From grilling essentials like fresh meats and produce to drinks in the grill itself, you'll find the items you need at prices worth celebrating. And if you're not a member, you can start your savings with a bang. Join as a new member on July 1st through 4th, and you'll receive a $10 gift card. Sam's Club, where membership means terrific values this 4th of July and every day.
Summer's here, it's family vacation time. So before you hit the road, make sure your car is ready at the Sears Summer Travel Sale. Right now at the Sears Auto Center, all tires are on sale. Plus, buy three Goodyear Weather Handler LS, Eagle GTHR, or Wrangler SRA tires and get the fourth free. Get your car serviced 7 days a week, including nights, and shop while you wait. So come into the Sears Auto Center now and get ready to live like it's summer. Sears. Exclusions apply. See store for details. Offer valid 627-08-7508.
President Bush today signed the last war funding bill of his tenure.
Our nation has no greater responsibility than supporting our men and women in uniform.
It totals $162 billion. The situation in Afghanistan is deteriorating. For the second straight month, more American and NATO troops have been killed there than in Iraq. One reason is Pakistan's failure to remove al-Qaeda and the Taliban from their safe havens in the tribal areas along the border. Pentagon consultant Seth Jones says it can't be done with U.S. airstrikes and artillery alone.
What's needed in the tribal areas is a much longer approach of clearing territory and holding it.
Jones says those areas are most likely to be the source of a new attack on the United States. Barack Obama and Bill Clinton broke the ice. CBS News correspondent Howard Arenstein says they spoke for the first time since Obama beat Hillary Clinton in the Democratic primaries.
Obama called the former president as the candidate drove to Independence, Missouri. They spoke for about 20 minutes. An Obama spokesman said it was a terrific conversation and that the Democratic nominee looks forward to appearing together on the campaign trail and receiving Clinton's counsel in the months ahead.
Obama made a speech in Independence defending his patriotism. Wearing an American flag lapel pin, he said, "I will never question the patriotism of others in this campaign, and I will not stand idly by when I hear others question mine." Obama disavowed Wesley Clark's comment yesterday. Speaking of John McCain, the retired general said, "I don't think riding in a fighter plane and getting shot down is a qualification to be president." The Agriculture Department says farmers will harvest 9% fewer acres of corn this year, in part due to the Midwest flooding. Roger Moore is president of the Minnesota Corn Growers Association.
If the corn price is going to stay relatively strong, it's a challenge for livestock and ethanol producers, and we understand that. And I would say food prices are probably going to stay relatively high.
You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Summer's here. It's family vacation time. So before you hit the road, make sure your car is ready at the Sears Summer Travel Sale. Right now at the Sears Auto Center, all tires are on sale. Plus, buy three Goodyear Weather Handler LS, Eagle GTHR, or Wrangler SRA tires and get the fourth free. Get your car serviced 7 days a week, including nights, and shop while you wait. So come into the Sears Auto Center now and get ready to live like it's summer. Sears. Exclusions apply. See store for details. Offer valid 627-08 to 7508.
As the price of gas continues to rise, so does the number of fuel-saving experts. Look, the guys at Advanced Auto Parts aren't scientists inventing hydrogen engines or cellulosic ethanol. They got their PhDs in parts. Stuff like air filters, spark plugs, fuel system cleaners, and other things that make cars run more efficiently. Look, if you really want to save money on gas, go buy a bike. Otherwise, head on over to Advanced Auto Parts. They'll show you how to get more miles per gallon. Whatever you're working on, Advanced will help you keep the wheels turning.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
If you're one of those people who has a sticker or a poster from 5-6 years ago that says, "No war for oil," well, you were right. And later this hour, Antonia Juhas returns to our program to talk about the deal that will be announced in Baghdad today, returning the rights to multinational oil companies to profit from oil in Iraq. And they're the same suspects who sell you gas in this country.
I feel so extraordinary. Something so out of me. I get this feeling I'm in motion. A certain sense of liberty. I can't cause an affair. I don't care if I'm here tomorrow.
Toward the end of its term last week, the U.S. Supreme Court issued a flurry of rulings, and I disagreed with just about every one of them. I didn't agree with their reduction in the money damages Exxon should have paid to those who were hurt by the Exxon Valdez oil spill in Alaska. I did not agree with their precedent-setting decision saying that the Second Amendment confers a personal right to have a gun. But I did agree with the 5-4 decision authored by Justice Kennedy that overturned the death penalty law in Louisiana for those convicted of raping a child. And my reason is that the Supreme Court put a rational rank order on penalties for heinous crimes. I think there's little dispute that raping a child is one of the ugliest things you can imagine a human doing to another. But I think you also must concede, even if you don't agree with my position, that executing someone who did not take another person's life is not a rational penalty. Now, I am opposed to the death penalty in all cases. I believe it's immoral. I believe it's barbaric. And I think it flies in the face of the Eighth Amendment ban on cruel and unusual punishment. But if there is going to be a death penalty in this country, I want it to be based on rational thinking, not emotional, vengeful feelings that cloud people's judgment and lead to a scene like the Roman Colosseum, where we simply cheer on the spectacle and overlook the barbarism and the cost to our own psyches. And it offends me deeply that my candidate for president, Barack Obama, has said he disagrees with this Supreme Court decision. We'll talk about that next hour in the Free Speech Zone. Joining me now to comment on this is Judy Benitez from an organization called L.A. FASA, or Louisiana Foundation Against Sexual Assault. Her organization filed an amicus brief, that's a friend of the court brief, on behalf of the perpetrator in this case, the plaintiff, Patrick Kennedy. Judy Benitez, welcome to our program today.
Thank you.
And I appreciate you joining us and your willingness to talk about this. These are very difficult issues. And in your work, I'm sure that you've grown accustomed to dealing with the feelings that people have about sexual assault, especially when it occurs and it happens to a child. And we all have a great revulsion to that. But I am really pleased to know that your organization, and I think you personally, were able to cut through your own feelings and emotions and look at this in a rational manner. Tell us why you filed a brief on behalf of Patrick Kennedy, the man who raped a child.
Well, of course, officially the amicus brief was on behalf of the petitioner, Patrick Kennedy, but our concern was not at all with the petitioner. Our concern was with the victim, not only of this particular crime, but of all child rape cases, because our feeling is, and our thought is, based on, you know, many, many years of working directly with victims of sexual assault, including child rape victims, is that children are reluctant to come forward when they have been sexually assaulted because in most cases, in the majority of cases, the perpetrator is either a family member or a close family friend.
Yep.
Someone about whom the victim has ambivalent feelings. Something that we hear quite a lot is, you know, I didn't hate him. I just wanted it to stop. Or even that they loved him. They don't want the perpetrator to even go to jail in many cases. Now, of course, I'm generalizing. That's not always the case, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes it very hard for the child to come forward when they have mixed feelings towards this person. And I think it's important to remember that it's not just the child that has to come forward. It's also the family member to whom they disclose, because most kids are not going to, you know, report to the police. They're going to tell some other adult. And even though the other adult, if they, assuming they believe the child, they may be furious with the perpetrator, but to ask them to be willing to put this person who may be their husband, their brother, their father, to have them be willing to put that person to death is just, we're afraid it's really going to increase the rate of underreporting, which is already a huge problem.
Well, and a greater risk, frankly, and disagree with me if you care to, is that this sends a signal that if you rape a child, you may as well, or you're better off, or you're equally situated if you kill that child in this act or afterward than if you let that child survive. I think that sends a really corrupt message from our criminal justice system. And I know that not all messages are received rationally by criminal perpetrators.
Sure. Well, in the decision, the court was very articulate, and it was interesting how they discussed this. They said that, you know, to the extent that, you know, you look at criminals as rational people, and thus you can say that the death penalty might be a deterrent, you have to give equal weight to the fact that, you know, if they're being rational and they're not stupid, they're not going to leave a living witness. So that was one argument, but sort of inherent in what you just said is the idea that a child who has been raped, their life is over. They may as well have been killed. And that's very offensive to say to victims, to anyone. I mean, their life is absolutely changed. It will never be the same. That's true of anyone who goes through any kind of traumatic event. But they can still have a really good life. And to send the message that they're as good as dead is a horrible thing to say to a child.
Mm-hmm. So tell me what kind of response you've gotten, Judy, from those who I would call self-righteous, people who operate from a very narrow sense of right and wrong and who believe that this is such a heinous crime. They put the rational arguments aside. They put the unintended consequences that you just described aside. And they say this is so evil that that person doesn't deserve to live.
You know, we have heard from some victims who have really validated the view that I just expressed, which is, you know, thank you for acknowledging that I'm not dead just because I was raped as a child. We've also heard from some groups that have similar missions as ours that for whatever reason opted not to sign on to the amicus brief. We weren't by any means the only victims' rights group on it, but there were fewer than five. And some other groups have said, you know, I'm so glad that you all were able to do that. And we feel like the outcome is probably what's best for kids in you know, 99% of cases. But then, of course, we've also heard from the folks saying, I can't believe you feel sorry for perpetrators. Why do you want to let child rapists out of jail? As though if you don't have the option of executing a defendant, then that means you have to let them go. And that's really, you know, just the lack of information before someone speaks, the lack of critical thinking skills is really disheartening.
Yeah. Judy, do you have a three strikes law in Louisiana?
No, we don't. But we do have a habitual offender bill, which it's something that it's not an automatic thing. It's something that the prosecutor's office has to do proactively. But there can be enhanced sentencing for increased felonies.
Well, I certainly support that. The problem in California, we have this three strikes law that was passed using the Polyclass case as a very grueling and grisly manipulative example. And in fact, you know, the guy who did that to her was sentenced to life in prison, and we didn't need three strikes to get justice in her case. But we now have, you know, somewhere on the order of 20,000 people doing hard time in the California prison system, many who didn't commit a violent crime. They stole a pizza, a bicycle, they stole their dinner, you know, really petty crimes from losers. And it is an example of the irrationality that many people apply to criminal justice issues. And they simply say, I don't care about the details, lock them up, throw away the key. And I just am so pleased to hear you, with your passion and your commitment to the rights of victims of sexual assault, still rational about the criminal justice system and the need to have a rational basis for punishment.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, I'm offended that there are people sitting in prison, taking up a bed in prison for property crimes, and child molesters and rapists are being let out because there's not enough room in the prisons. I mean, that's highly offensive to me.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's I think with criminal justice, it is at times very nuanced. And whenever you find yourself saying always do something or never do something, you're going to run into problems. I mean, obviously there have to be rules, but when public policy is set by such high emotion, I think that's why there are elected officials. I think that's how this law got passed in the first place in Louisiana. It's too easy to end up on the wrong side of a 30-second attack spot saying this person didn't want to send rapists to the death chamber.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, you know, you can't, how do you fight back against that?
Judy Benitez with us. Her organization is the Louisiana Foundation Against Sexual Assault. Their website is LaFASA, LAFASA.org, LAFASA.org, if you'd like to get more information. Our lines are open if you'd like to talk about the Supreme Court case and the viewpoint of Judy Benitez, which I support. 888-5-PETER-B is our toll-free number. Join me now, 888-573-8372. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning last.
Hello, I'm Barbara Mossberg. You know you move too fast. And I'm inviting you to join me Sundays to slow down for our poetry hour. Here's the lowdown on our poetry hoedown. Meet me at high noon, and we'll make the morning last right here on KRXA 540.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. To experience one-of-a-kind dishes, don't forget the weekly specials. The Mexicali Grill is open Monday through Saturday for lunch until 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Hey, are you driving around looking for a coffee shop with free internet? Right here in Pacific Grove, you'll find Black Forest Espresso, a fun and friendly place to hang out. We have a large espresso bar ready to make any gourmet drink, homemade drafts, mochas, lattes. How about 100% fruit smoothies and old-fashioned milkshakes with 14 flavors? Black Forest is also the only place to get soft-serve fat-free frozen yogurt. We're the last hometown coffee shop at the Country Club Gate Shopping Center at Forest and David next to Save Mart Pacific Grove. Check out blackforestespresso.com.
Checking traffic on KRXA. No huge delays to report right now, but we do have reports of a garbage can in the slow lane of Highway 1 northbound just past Casa Verde Way. We also had some earlier wooden stakes in the road northbound 101 just north of Front Street in Monterey, but it looks like those have been cleared out of the way, which is good news. Otherwise, just some typical slowing, but we do have some closures, of course, from the fire. Highway 1 is closed in both directions between the Nepenthe South Entrance and the town of Lucia. No estimated time of when that will reopen. And traffic is brought to you by Parrots. Positive Parrot reminds you that as of July 1st, California law requires drivers to use a hands-free device for making calls. Get a Parrot instead of a ticket. Check out the complete line of Parrot hands-free car kits at Parrot.com. I'm Kimmy Klein, and that's traffic on KRXA.
And the Peter B. Collins Show continues. I remain your humble host, Peter B. My guest is Judy Benitez from Louisiana's Foundation Against Sexual Assault. Again, their website is simple, lafasa.org. We're talking about the Supreme Court's This is a very radical decision, I think, by this Supreme Court to reject Louisiana's law, which provided for the death penalty for those convicted of child rape. And Justice Kennedy, in writing for the majority, set the precedent that in the future, an execution cannot take place for a crime in which a death did not occur, a wrongful death. And Louisiana became the first state to adopt this death penalty provision in 95. Two men, including the plaintiff here, Kennedy, have been sentenced under this, and both of their sentences are now set aside. Five other states, Texas, Georgia, Oklahoma, South Carolina, and Montana, have similar laws, but no one has yet been convicted or sentenced there. Writing for the majority, Justice Kennedy said, "The constitutional prohibition against excessive or cruel and unusual punishments mandates that the state's power to punish be exercised within the limits of civilized standards. The incongruity between the crime of child rape and the harshness of the death penalty poses risks of overpunishment and counsels against a constitutional ruling that the death penalty can be expanded to include this offense." Now, Judy, that is a very rational statement, and with each clause, I can hear people responding, saying, for example, that to say that this risks over-punishment, there are people who would say there could be no over-punishment for raping a child. What could be worse?
Well, I think that the thing to keep in mind, and if you keep it centered like this, it's not hard to come to the conclusion that this is a bad law, is that we have to take the victim into consideration. And historically, the criminal justice system has not done that. It's not, you know, Bob Jones versus Patrick Kennedy. It's state of Louisiana versus Patrick Kennedy. And the victim does not have legal standing. However, to totally create a criminal justice system that has nothing whatsoever to do with the victim is just cruel. And really, you know, we try to make sure that things are as victim-centered as they possibly can be. And when you look at the impact that this has on victims, not only from, you know, the risk of victims being killed, but also just the psychological impact of having to testify over and over, yeah, as is often the case in capital cases, it's really just terrific. It does not provide any kind of increased public safety that putting the person at Louisiana State Penitentiary at Angola for the rest of their life does not provide. And that is the other option for child rape, is life without parole, and it's real life.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have, you know, in those situations, there's no time off for good behavior or anything like that.
Judy, you've been clear, and I'm very clear, that you're not that focused on the offender. But Patrick Kennedy maintains that he is innocent, and his stepdaughter, who accused him, first accused two neighborhood teenagers. Do you have any misgivings at all about the strength of the validity of his underlying conviction?
No, I really don't. I think that there are a lot of dynamics, and without talking about this case in particular, there are a lot of different reasons why children are can't. And I'm not sure exactly what happened in this particular case, but some of the reasons why kids recant is that they see that there's a process that's starting, and they're going to be required to talk about what happened in front of total strangers as well as in front of the person who did it. There may be other family members that are pressuring them to recant. I mean, there's just so many things that can happen. And this kind of recantation happens all the time. I think that the victim is aware of, you know, she knew obviously who her stepfather was and who the neighborhood boys were. And, you know, I just am not really concerned about, I think there's sufficient evidence. It doesn't seem like that's a particularly weighty argument.
Okay, I understand your point. Go ahead.
It is important to note that in 11 cases in which there has been DNA evidence that has led to rapists being freed, there were 11 cases that in which a child was the victim. So that's 11 cases where if the person had been sentenced to death, you know, and DNA had not come along, you know, those people would be certainly overpunished for someone who didn't do anything.
A quick comment from Brad in Aptos. Welcome, Brad.
Hi, thanks. You know, I am encouraged by this decision because it seems to me, it limits the number of capital punishments that occur in my name. And, you know, I'm one of those people who's completely uncomfortable with that occurring at all. And so I like this law that limits it, or this decision that limits it, that says
right.
we're not going beyond, you know, crimes where death occurred.
Okay, Brad, thank you very much. And Judy, from your perspective, do you think that life without parole is a sufficient punishment for child rape?
I do, and that actually even brings up another argument that you could say among the, you know, those who would say, you know, lock them up and throw away the key. I think that life without parole is appropriate. I don't think that they should have, you know, 5 or 10 years of appeals and then mm-hmm. get put to death.
Judy, our time is up, but I thank you for joining us and appreciate your work.
Thank you.
Judy Benitez.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
I thought we were supposed to be stimulating ourselves. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. I was having lunch with a group of friends over the weekend, and the conversation turned to those stimulus checks. You remember the stimulus checks? The Democrats love them.
This is a middle-class initiative to strengthen the middle class and to those who aspire to be in the middle class.
The Republicans love them.
It'll stimulate our economy by putting money in the hands of middle-income American families.
The president loves them.
The incentives in this package will lead to higher consumer spending and increased business investment this year.
Only Mike Bloomberg hated them.
We can't borrow our ways out of this problem. The jig is up.
So I'm with this group of friends, and I innocently ask, how many of you bought big-screen TVs? Silence. I said, come on, how many of you? Nobody had bought a big-screen TV. They spent it on gas, paying off credit card bills for stuff they'd already bought. One person paid to replace an engine in his truck. But how many of them bought anything they wouldn't otherwise have bought in order to save their country? Nobody. And this is what's wrong with America today. We can't even obey a simple instruction to shop. Maybe the rest of the world will bail us out. Let's see what the international banking community is saying about that.
The Bank of International Settlements says the world could be facing months, even years, of deflation of the sort not seen since the Great Depression.
What do you people have against buying a decent-sized TV set? Okay, how about a really expensive AM radio? They have them with built-in cranks and flashlights now. Now this.
Computer security threats such as spam, spyware, viruses, and hackers invade your business every day through email, instant messaging, web browsing, and your company's website. With no software to install and no per-user license fees, Barracuda Network Firewalls are easy to set up and affordable. Do what 50,000 other companies have done. Reclaim your network with a Barracuda Network Firewall. For a free evaluation unit, call Barracuda Networks, 888-ANTI-SPAM, 888-ANTI-SPAM, or go online to barracuda.com.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Mandarin and Cantonese food prepared to order every day. The May family invites you to savor authentic Chinese dishes like congee and juke at Jim's Restaurant, 1584 Del Monte in Seaside. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.75 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget, Jim's is tops for takeout and catering too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Hi, I'm Debbie LaSala from LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli at 250 Casa Verde Way in Monterey. Buy Right has been a family-owned Monterey Bay treasure since 1938. Hungry for delicious sandwiches? Join the many LaSala regulars who love our tasty, hearty sandwiches prepared with fresh-baked Palermo bread. Eat in or grab on the run at LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli. Whatever your choice, we at LaSala's will greet you with Mon Pa hospitality and truly awesome meals. And remember, sandwich trays are also available for meetings and parties. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli is located on the west side of Highway 1, exiting at 250 Casa Verde Way and going just past the first stop sign. For more information, call 372-6824. That's 372-6824. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli. A Mon Pa treasure at your service for 70 years.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
If you've been thinking over the last 5 years that we went into Iraq because they got oil, you was right.
I can't take it no more.
On, Johnny, what about the oil?
Talk about staying because you keep a beating that old dead horse. You knew you lied about how we went to war. I can't take it no more.
Former Creedence frontman John Fogerty, he's mad as hell. Can't take it no more. As we've long suspected, the evidence is surfacing. The real cause for our unilateral invasion and long-term occupation of Iraq was the large stocks of crude oil under the sands there. Antonia Juhas returns to our program, author of The Bush Agenda, Invading the World, One Economy at a Time. She is a visiting scholar with the Institute for Policy Studies and a great person just in general. Antonia, how are you today?
I'm great. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Haven't talked to you in a while, and I'm glad to reconnect with you.
Well, I've been working on my new book, which is coming out in October.
Tell us.
A quick plug-in for that.
Go right ahead. Tell us what it's about.
The new book is right in line with what we're going to be talking about today. The title is The Tyranny of Oil, the World's Most Powerful Industry, and What We Must Do to Stop It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any way you can get it out before October?
Believe me. I'm trying. You and my publisher both.
Well, it is quite timely. And, Antonia, you and I have talked maybe 10 times over the last 4 or 5 years in Washington, here in the Bay Area. And you've talked about the PSAs, the production sharing agreements. And most of what you described over the last few years is coming to pass. The New York Times reports here on Monday the contracts are expected to be awarded. No bidding, no messy competitive bidding, and the same old characters, Exxon, Shell, BP, Total, and Chevron, will be processing and profiting from oil extracted from underground in Iraq. And this really is deja vu because basically the same characters were booted out when Saddam Hussein nationalized Iraq's oil industry some 30 years ago.
Yeah, if you look at the fact that Chevron purchased Gulf Oil in 1984, that makes it the original Iraq Petroleum Company that essentially owned and controlled all of Iraq's oil until nationalization, and now they're all on the verge of coming back in. It's been a very interesting week. Actually, today, the New York Times lead story was also something that I have been working on with many of my colleagues for now 5 years trying to expose, which is the role of U.S. both Bush administration officials and private contractors in directly shaping the contracts that are now on the table. The New York Times writing this, it's great for the New York Times to do this, but as if it was some grand discovery,
right,
that the Bush administration and private companies for working for the Bush administration have been directly involved in these negotiations, and even as the article says, crafting contracts.
Now, what about the 20-somethings from the Heritage Foundation who were there during Paul Bremer's reign over the U.S. Occupation Authority? Are they still in the mix here, writing those contracts and offering advice?
I don't know if the Heritage folks are. I mean, basically, what's happened in the last week, just to be really clear, is not what the Heritage folks were hoping for. It's not what the Bush administration is hoping for, and it's not what the oil companies are hoping for. They're still trying to get the big prize, which is to force Iraq to pass a new oil law altogether, which would open up production contracts for foreign companies with up to 30 years of control of fields. The reason why they haven't been able to get that is because the Iraqi parliament in particular and the Iraqi people, and not to mention American people and British people and other people, have opposed passage. And the Iraqi parliament refuses to pass the law. So what these contracts are is really a stopgap measure. They are 1 to 2 year contracts that are technical service contracts that essentially were given, you know, without bidding, without competition, without public debate, to the companies that have been working the most closely with the Bush administration and the British government and most directly involved in the occupation, the companies that you've named. And they would get essentially a foot in the door towards what they really want, which are these longer-term contracts. But mm-hmm. right now, you know, the game isn't over. The game has not been won. The Bush administration continues to face the same problem it's faced since the beginning of the invasion, which is that Iraqis aren't, on the whole, rolling over and letting the, you know, Bush agenda take hold. That hasn't stopped the oil companies or the administration from continuing to of course, push its agenda, though.
Now, Antonia, this may be a digression, and if so, just tell me and we'll come back. But is there any discussion in the negotiations for the Status of Forces Agreement related to oil, protection of pipelines, protection of foreign companies operating in Iraq?
I don't know. You know, the negotiations have been ongoing, and the last version I saw basically just held in place the Bremer orders, the laws that have already been changed in Iraq by the Bush administration without forward-looking towards new requirements, mm-hmm. things like passage of the oil law, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But those negotiations have been ongoing, and also you know, hotly resisted by the Iraqi parliament, which is still of the opinion that the occupation should be over, as is the majority of the Iraqi public when they're asked in polls. Essentially, what we're seeing right now is the Bush administration in negotiations with the al-Maliki cabinet and oil corporations trying to make an end run essentially around the Iraqi parliament and the U.S. Congress, which has, in fact, passed in its appropriations, something called the Biden Amendment, which said that U.S. money can't be used towards trying to essentially gain control of Iraq's oil. And if we believe, which I certainly do and have demonstrated myself, the New York Times argument today that U.S. staff members of the Bush administration are helping craft these contracts, that is in direct, directly contravenes the Biden Amendment. So you've got the Bush administration, U.S. oil companies, and the Iraqi cabinet trying to circumvent, essentially, the people of their countries and their own Congress and Parliament.
But the State Department advisors on the Western contracts say they purposely avoid trying to shape Iraqi policy. They have not negotiated with the international oil companies since the 1970s, said a senior State Department official who is speaking about Iraqi oil officials and is directly involved in shaping United States energy policy. So they were just trying to help them. It's a mentor program, Antonia. Why are you so skeptical of this?
Right. You know, yeah, take them at their word. Let's say they're not trying to dictate policy. They do say in the article, they're quoted as saying, named and unnamed administration officials, where we were crafting contracts. The Iraqis didn't know how to do private contracts because they've had a nationalized oil industry for 30 years, and so we were helping them draw up private contracts. Now, that's just completely unprecedented. It's a foreign occupier drafting private commercial contracts for the occupied government on behalf of its own corporations. I mean, it's just completely, you know, I mean, it's so colonial Britain occupying Iraq, I don't know where else to reach for a corollary.
Well, can't you imagine, too, that in each State Department official's briefcase there's a copy of oil contracts for dummies?
I'm sure there is. I mean, you know, I think what we have to be concerned about right now, from both our own democracy and the idea of an Iraqi democracy is that, you know, what we've got are these companies that have been trying since, you know, before the invasion, now coming very close to achieving that foot in the door. And the way that these contracts appear to be written, by the way, you know, thanks, I guess, to the U.S. Government, is with a right of refusal clause, which gives the oil companies that sign them the first right to bid on the future contracts should they come, which are these 40-year contracts.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that Chevron and Exxon and BP and Shell and Total, I think from our concern, most importantly, Exxon and Chevron, have a guaranteed foot in the door over, for example, you know, any Iraqi companies that might yet come to the fore, and definitely guaranteed, you know, opening the door to 30-year control of the oil by U.S. oil companies. And what I have contended all along is that, you know, that is, one, the goal, but, two, should it be achieved, we would most certainly be locked in to being forced to protect that their operations and that oil, you know, with the use of the U.S. military and private contractors.
Yeah, if somebody attacks Chevron or Exxon, and that would be interpreted as an attack on the United States government. You can just imagine the mentality in Washington in a circumstance like that. We're talking with Antonia Juhasz. Her last name is J-U-H-A-S-Z. Her most recent book, The Bush Agenda, Invading the World One Economy at a Time. She's got a new one coming out this fall. And she's with us till the top of the hour. So if you have a question or comment about Iraq's oil, give us a call now, toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. And if you're filling up while you call, that's okay, 888-573-8372. Antonia, I just imagine that you're familiar with Naomi Klein's most recent book, The Shock Doctrine, and with the reporting that she's done about the U.S. imposition of American economic protocols and also the insertion of American companies into Iraq as part of the overall plan. That comes back to the Chicago School of Economics, and as Klein points out in her book, this has occurred step by step around the world, starting with Chile in the 1970s. And so when we zoom out and look at Iraq as part of this larger pattern, all of this pretty well fits in, doesn't it?
Sure, but and I think that's very important, and I, of course, I think that you know, Naomi's new book, The Shock Doctrine, is extremely important reading. But, you know, I think in terms of understanding what this administration is trying to do right now, it is unique. It's unique that this administration chose a military invasion, a full-out invasion, and a full-out occupation, and proposed to, you know, as its means of achieving this very sort of age-old economic model, different from the previous Bush administration, certainly different from the Clinton administration, and what it hopes to achieve before it leaves office. I think that, you know, what this administration has done is, as I said earlier, way more similar to a colonial model, and I think the bravado of this administration that it could and should and did do that, and that its plans, I think, still remain on the table, and that the administration will hold on to this until the bitter end, to continue to carry this model to Iran, and to use a military invasion, not along the same lines as the Iraq invasion, but still a military invasion to achieve its economic goals in Iran are still very real and something we have to hold on to. And to say, you know, what can Barack Obama do right now to guarantee to us that he will end this current model, not carry it to Iran, not carry it to other countries, to show that he will reverse policy from this administration, and then, yes, of course, from a sort of broader set of economic models that the United States has been following for quite some time.
Very good. We're going to take a break and return with Antonia Juhas. We'll go to the phones in the next segment. Lines open for you at 888-5-PETER-B. And I'm glad you raised Iran, Antonia. Tomorrow, we lead the show with Scott Ritter. He'll be with us at 3 o'clock Pacific time in our live broadcast to talk about his concerns about the Bush administration's attitude toward Iran. And Seymour Hersh's latest dispatch in The New Yorker will figure in, too. That's tomorrow here on The Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Checking traffic on KRXA. We have a problem in Salinas, Highway 68 eastbound at Torero Drive. Two-car accident may be hazardous for drivers in that eastbound lane, but it isn't blocking. In Monterey, southbound 101 just before San Juan Road, there's an accident on the shoulder. Otherwise, we are going to see some road construction in Santa Cruz County. Emmeline Ave undercrossing is closed as it passes under Highway 1 from Fernside Street to Lee Street for some concrete finish work that's going on today through Thursday. And, of course, Highway 1 is closed in both directions between Nepenthe and the town of Lucia, that 20-mile stretch. And traffic is brought to you by Dexatrim Max. New Dexatrim Max Daytime Appetite Control. Same great Dexatrim Max, but now with extended release action to help block hunger and boost energy and metabolism through the day. That's traffic on KRXA.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following The Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after The Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Come here, Max. What's wrong? What? Oh, I get it. A rough day?
Hi, I'm Dr. Annetta Richmond, inviting you to Natural Veterinary Therapy in Pacific Grove, the peninsula's new holistic veterinary medicine clinic featuring a wide variety of natural treatments and remedies for common ailments. We also specialize in acupuncture, chiropractic, and physical rehabilitation using an underwater treadmill. Natural Veterinary Therapy, Lighthouse Avenue between 14th and 15th in Pacific Grove. Our environment is unique. Clients comment on how calm and caring it is for their pets and themselves. At Natural Veterinary Therapy, our goal is to help your pet heal from within. So think for yourself and think for your pets. Visit our website at naturalveterinarytherapy.com or call 655-0501. That's 655-0501.
Meow. Whiskers, I'd better call Dr. Richmond for you, too.
Meow, meow.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffeehouse in SoCal Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose-leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive and Porter Street in SoCal.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. Who will be the last to die for that Iraqi oil? Springsteen, from his latest release called Magic. We continue now with Antonia Juhas, author of The Bush Agenda, Invading the World One Economy at a Time, and a scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies. And we're joined by William in Santa Cruz. Hi, William. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, Peter and Antonia. I guess I'm just making a comment that concurs with points that you guys have already made, because you basically already nailed this, but maybe another twist or shading on there. And that is with the U.S. military in Iraq. And I see that as not only to protect the pipelines, but also to enforce the to intimidate the Iraqi government, that they never decide that they don't want to have these agreements with these oil companies, and they decide to undo that. So with the U.S. military there, it serves a dual function, but it also demonstrates the whole principle of what you were talking about when you touched on with Naomi Klein and Shock Doctrine, the Rise of Disaster Capitalism, that the whole fascist state, that we're doing all of this for these oil companies. Yeah, and we get oil, we get gas and energy for our needs here at home, but also these profits are privatized, and at the moment these profits are huge.
So yes, they are.
So this is really a definition of a fascist state, and it really is un-American, actually, if you go back to the founding of this country with the Boston Tea Party and so many things. See, the people who fought, or a lot of them at least, who fought the Revolutionary War for independence from England, they were sensitive to this whole confluence of the military, and then the British King was conscripting people into the army, and then they were a foil. They would go into different areas and pacify areas of the earth so that the British East India Company could go in there and do business. So it was this relationship, this nexus of corporations and government.
And William, I'm not offended by your appropriate use of the F-bomb here. Fascism is in play. Antonia?
You know, excellent points. You know, I would just add that there's certainly no guarantee as well that simply because Exxon or Chevron gets an oil contract in Iraq, that has anything to do with Americans getting more oil or more gasoline. You know, they will just sell the oil where they will make the most money, and it's a global market. So I think, you know, with Bush and McCain as well, I think trying to pitch that military engagements in the Middle East help secure oil for the United States, while that may, in fact, have been true at certain times in the past, right now it's really just securing oil for U.S. oil companies that they can then do with whatever they want.
And two reasons for that. One is the big growth in demand is in China, and number two, the dollar's worth bupkis.
Well, yes, and these are global companies, and so, you know, there's no link between ExxonMobil gaining access to oil and oil being sold in the United States and
That's
gasoline
right.
being sold in the United States.
I guess if I were going to add anything to that, I think that if the United States taxpayers are going to put out so much money to support these corporations, then those profits shouldn't be 100% privatized. The American public should get something out of all this huge military investment they're making in Iraq, which basically goes to serve the oil companies.
Yeah, we ought to get our $600 billion back.
We should be major stockholders in those oil companies. We should get some financial benefit.
Oh, there you go again. That's socialism, William. What do you want to do? Nationalize them? Huh?
Have a good day.
Thank you.
Or at a minimum, let's actually enforce that age-old Americanism, the tax, and actually tax these companies, not to mention a windfall profits tax. And I think clearly, as a given, but it should be stated, you know, we have no desire whatsoever to fight wars on behalf of these companies, and of course the bottom line is to shift away from their product altogether, not to try and cash in on their profits.
Right. So, Antonia, we don't protect anybody on this program. What do you think the intentions are of Barack Obama in terms of Iraq's oil? He does talk in this broad way about bringing the troops home or at least redeploying them, but I've never heard him explicitly talk about the issues, A, of permanent bases in Iraq, and B, you know, what should be done with the oil.
Yeah, I mean, certainly Obama's plan does not commit to fully withdrawing troops anytime soon, does not commit to closing the largest embassy in the world, the U.S. embassy in Baghdad. And I have not for one heard him talk about the Iraq oil law or the role of U.S. oil companies in Iraq.
And I think it's time that we heard him on that. He's definitely made some very bold statements about the oil industry, about oil companies. He's made some good comments about taxation. He's got some good ideas on alternatives, although I disagree quite strongly with some of the others. For example, he supports a cap-and-trade system, which essentially creates a market in pollution.
Mm-hmm. Right. You prefer the tax and rebate approach?
I'm just all for tax and regulate.
Okay.
Actually regulate the company so that they don't pollute, and if they do...
Wouldn't hurt to rebate, too, the people hardest hit by the cost increases.
It wouldn't hurt to rebate as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, and Obama has been very good about rejecting PAC money from the oil industry, although he has taken money from individuals that work for oil companies, which has added up to quite a fair amount of money, including from ExxonMobil. You know, I think we have to get him on the record. I don't think I can say what his intentions are for Iraq's oil. I think we have to get him on the record.
Antonia, always a pleasure. We'll talk again.
Thanks for having me.
Let me know when your book's out in the fall.
Will do.
Antonia Juhas here on the Peter B. Collins Show. The Free Speech Zone is next, and I want to talk to you.
I'm John Gorenfeld, and I've just written a book, Bad Moon Rising, because I thought maybe it said something about just how crazy our politics have become when a wealthy newspaper publisher dresses up like King George III in front of congressmen, and no one seems to care. Bad Moon Rising is about the conservative love affair with the Reverend Moon, the cult leader who publishes the Washington Times, travels with the Bush family.
Reverend Moon never tried to tell him what to say.
And puts on Washington's worst dinner parties. The book is Bad Moon Rising, how Reverend Moon created the Washington Times, seduced the religious right, and built an American kingdom. The foreword's by Barry Lynn. Bad Moon Rising follows an all-star cast of conservatives as they sell their souls to a cult leader. From Jerry Falwell to John McCain's top advisor, you name them, they're in my book. Bad Moon Rising. Buy it for a conservative friend and blow someone's mind. Find out more at The King of...
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Many Americans are like Ike, a New Yorker who's had to change his lifestyle because of high gasoline prices.
We don't go out with a car anymore. My wife goes with subways and buses. My daughter's car is parked in the garage, unless it's a necessity.
With the national average above $4 a gallon, Troy Green of AAA says people have scaled back their holiday travel plans, and some are forced to make very difficult choices.
You hear stories of people saying, okay, can I fill up this week? Or can I buy groceries for my family? Do I fill up this week at the gas pump, or do I spend money on my medications?
Fewer people are willing to spend money on a large vehicle. Chrysler has announced plans to close a minivan plant in Fenton, Missouri, and cut production at a pickup plant down to one shift. KMOX Radio's Kevin Colleen talked with people who face losing their jobs.
Chrysler workers leaving the Fenton plant are in a bad mood.
Kind of devastating.
Well, I mean, I'm prepared, but you still got to... keep your prayers up, you know.
There's really nothing out there that pays like this, I don't think.
These are good jobs here at Chrysler in Fenton, averaging $27 an hour, up to $70,000 a year with overtime. As one Chrysler worker put it, leaving the factory, another sad day in paradise.
The tab for the war on terrorism got a lot bigger today. CBS News correspondent Mark Noller reports.
It took some compromising on his part, but President Bush was able to sign the last funding bill he'll need for U.S. military operations in Iraq and Afghanistan, totaling $162 billion.
I appreciate that Republicans and Democrats in Congress agreed to provide these vital funds without tying the hands of our commanders and without an artificial timetable of withdrawal from Iraq.
But to get the measure, Mr. Bush had to agree to a 13-week extension of unemployment benefits. Mark Noller, CBS News, the White House.
For 2 months now, more U.S. and NATO troops have been killed in Afghanistan than in Iraq, where foreign forces have a much larger presence. The problem, reports CBS News correspondent David Martin, is that the source of the attacks is out of reach across the border.
Pakistan's latest attempt to oust al-Qaeda and the Taliban from their safe havens in the frontier area has been, according to U.S. officials, ineffective. One militant leader was actually tipped off to the coming offensive by sympathizers within the Pakistani military.
U.S. forces are limited to firing artillery and occasional airstrikes on suspected al-Qaeda and Taliban targets. A Saudi detainee at Guantanamo Bay is being charged with organizing and directing the bombing of the USS Cole. That suicide attack in Yemen 8 years ago killed 17 American sailors. The Pentagon says it will seek the death penalty. On Wall Street, the Dow edged up 3 points to finish the month at 11,350. The Nasdaq down 22. The price of oil settled at $140 a barrel. This is CBS News.
The world calls us small business owners, but really,
there's nothing small about us. We have big ideas.
We see huge potential. We have
larger-than-life expectations, which is why we
and millions of other business owners use Visa Business.
Because we do business with a great big world and no other card.
No other card.
No other card is more accepted by it.
Visa Business, used for big ideas. Visit visa.com/smallbusiness.
Summer's here. It's family vacation time. So before you hit the road, make sure your car is ready at the Sears Summer Travel Sale. Right now at the Sears Auto Center, all tires are on sale. Plus, buy 3 Goodyear Weather Handler LS, Eagle GTHR, or Wrangler SRA tires and get the 4th free. Get your car serviced 7 days a week, including nights, and shop while you wait. So come into the Sears Auto Center now and get ready to live like it's summer. Sears. Exclusions apply. See store for details. Offer valid 627-08 to 7508.
The familiar one-gallon milk jug is gone from Walmart, Sam's Club, and Costco stores, replaced by squared-off containers that are meeting some consumer resistance. CBS's Vicki Barker has the story.
It looks kind of like a jerry can, the sort you keep in the trunk of your car for when you run out of gas. It's eco-friendly, easy to ship, and gets milk to market faster and cheaper than the old cartons or plastic jugs, but
it spills everywhere. Even my 15-year-old can't afford it.
Consumer Amy Wise talking to the New York Times. The Times notes some stores are giving lessons on using the jugs. Just one more way we're all having to adjust to a new eco-friendly, energy-hungry world. Vicki Barker, CBS News.
A British high school student taking an English exam scrawled obscenities on the page. Nevertheless, he got partial credit. The man who graded the paper says it was better than nothing at all. The student got 2 points out of a possible 27 for conveying some meaning and for spelling the bad words correctly. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
This 4th of July, your local Sam's Club is bursting with ways to save. Bring forth the flavor at your patriotic party with a barbecue. From grilling essentials like fresh meats and produce to drinks and the grill itself, you'll find the items you need at prices worth celebrating. And if you're not a member, you can start your savings with a bang. Join as a new member on July 1st through 4th, and you'll receive a $10 gift card. Sam's Club, where membership means terrific values this 4th of July and every day.
Summer's here. It's family vacation time. So before you hit the road, make sure your car is ready at the Sears Summer Travel Sale. Right now at the Sears Auto Center, all tires are on sale. Plus, buy 3 Goodyear Weather Handler LS, Eagle GTHR, or Wrangler SRA tires and get the 4th free. Get your car serviced 7 days a week, including nights, and shop while you wait. So come into the Sears Auto Center now and get ready to live like it's summer. Sears.
Exclusions apply. See store for details. Offer valid 627-08 to 7508.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to the Free Speech Zone here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Our lines are open to hear from you at 888-5-PETER-B. The rules are limited. Any subject, any viewpoint, call from anywhere within the sound of my voice, including Japan or England or New York City. 888-573-8372. Later this hour, we're going to meet a guy who's a diehard Hillary supporter and says he'll be voting for McCain this fall. Last hour, I thought we had a fascinating conversation with Judy Benitez from Louisiana about the Supreme Court decision last week overturning the death penalty in child rape cases. And as you heard, I deplore the remarks of Barack Obama opposing this Supreme Court decision because it set a new precedent that our capital punishment system will only apply to those who've committed a crime and taken the life of another. And as an opponent of the death penalty, this is an important standard that limits its application to at least the class of crimes where a human life was taken illegally. And Judy Benitez is a longtime supporter for the victims of sexual assault. And to hear her able to be rational on such a powerful, emotional, painful issue renews my faltering faith in Americans and our criminal justice system. Now, as you know, there was another Supreme Court ruling last week which upended the precedent regarding guns. That precedent was set in 1939 when the Supreme Court ruled that I don't have the right to have a machine gun. And that precedent was overturned when this Roberts Court ruled that the Second Amendment gives individuals the constitutional right to possess a weapon. Now, Scalia wrote that decision, and in it he acknowledged that that right is not unlimited, and that we can have rules to prevent underage people, felons, ex-felons, the mentally unstable. It is permissible to put restrictions on that constitutional right. And Friday's San Francisco Chronicle reported the Supreme Court gun ruling right next to a very painful story. Danielle Bologna lost her husband, Tony, her son, Michael, and after a stay in the hospital, her son, Matthew. They were shot and killed by an angry driver in San Francisco who was upset because Tony Bologna, yes, that was his name, Tony Bologna apparently cut him off and then backed up to permit the other guy to go forward. And even with that, the suspect, who is allegedly a gang member, pulled out a gun, shot and killed the father, shot and killed 20-year-old Michael, and wounded Matthew, age 16, who died a few days later. And Danielle Bologna wants the death penalty for the man who shot her husband and her two sons. Now, I understand the pain that she feels. I have compassion for her loss. And I don't believe she is an evil person at this very difficult time to call for what she considers to be the ultimate penalty for the man who took the lives of her loved ones. But I consider her to be irrational in this moment of grief, because having the state kill the man who killed her husband and two sons will not make her feel better. And it will not bring them back to life. And it's going to be an uphill struggle because the district attorney in San Francisco, Kamala Harris, is opposed to the death penalty and so far has not brought any capital cases. And I believe she's been in office for about 5 years. So I'd like to hear your thoughts about this, because I believe that the Supreme Court decision was irrational and that more people will die in the District of Columbia and elsewhere because of this ruling and because of the lifting of the ban on gun ownership in the district. The New York Times, in the Week in Review section on Sunday, reported that deaths from both homicide and suicide were down about 25% as you compared Washington with Baltimore over the last 20-plus years when that gun ban was in effect. And I understand all the practical arguments that you can bring a gun in over the border from Virginia or Maryland. I understand the criminals don't observe the law. They don't care whether their gun is legal or illegal. I do understand that. But fundamentally, just in the as in the case last hour that we discussed about the death penalty for perpetrators of child rape, we must have a rational system of crime and punishment. And I was so impressed with Judy Benitez because most of the victim rights advocates that I've talked to over the years are hardline vengeance people. They want to get even. They want the perpetrator to suffer as much as they have. And Judy Benitez is rational. So I'd like to hear your comments about this. And it's okay with me if you support gun rights and you think the Supreme Court made the right decision. It's okay with me if you think they made the right decision in the child rape law in Louisiana. But fundamentally, what I'm driving at is that we need to reevaluate where we are, and we need to return to a rational structure for crime and punishment. No two murders are the same. No two rapes are the same. No two child pornography cases like Bernie Ward's are the same. And we must allow the system, which is beautifully designed and most often achieves its goals, we need to allow it to work properly. We need to give judges the discretion to sentence people appropriate to the exact crime before them, not just a crime on the books. And we need to stop sentencing people to prison for year after year after year for nonviolent offenses. Now, one more item, and then we'll go to your calls at 888-5-PETER-B. Nancy Oliveira, who is on the board of Death Penalty Focus, published an op-ed in today's Chronicle, if you want to read it, sfgate.com. And it shows the true cost of the death penalty in California. There's 673 men on death row at San Quentin. Only 13 have been executed since 1978, while 59 have died of other causes, mostly natural causes, and 6 innocent people have been freed from California's death row. Currently, we would save $117 million a year if we canceled the death sentences and simply sentenced them to life without parole. The cost per inmate for death penalty convicts is $174,000 per year. And so we need to look at this rationally. And unfortunately, when it comes to crime, television and pandering politicians have made it almost impossible to do so. 888-573-8372. Dave in Eureka's up first here in the Free Speech Zone. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Peter. You have such an enlightening, such an informative, such an interesting and valuable program that I would, if I had the opportunity, be calling and commenting to you 5 times a day. But I know. Don't want to occupy the whole thing. But on the subject of the death penalty, I think that you, I so much agree with your own viewpoint on it and Antonio there, because it doesn't work. It doesn't do. You know, if you think of it as a deterrent, if people know that the death penalty awaits them if they commit a capital offense, they won't do it. Several things have been shown to be contrary to that. In some countries, particularly in the Middle East, they'd had a policy of hanging pickpockets. And when they hung the pickpockets, that was a field day for pickpockets to go about through the audience picking pockets.
Yeah.
In my home state of Rhode Island, we threw out the death penalty, I think it was 140 years ago, when they discovered they had hung an innocent person. And per capita, Rhode Island has had one of the lowest capital offense crime rates in the country. So is that because we don't have a death penalty, or is it because the death penalty doesn't serve as a deterrent? I Anyway, your next guest, they're all...
Speed Zone. Let me know your thoughts about these two controversial Supreme Court rulings. And if you disagree with me, I want you to call right now. 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. And we'll talk to that Hillary diehard coming up about 15 minutes from now on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Hi, this is Cynthia.
And this is Paul at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
Have you heard about the events at Pilgrim's Way in the Secret Garden? Maybe too late? Our events include workshops, lectures, and book signings by recognizable and well-known authors locally, nationally, and internationally on a wide range of topics.
Don't miss another chance. You can receive Pilgrim's Way event announcements personally by going to pilgrimsway.com and click on Events to subscribe to the private email service listed. An event calendar is also posted on the Pilgrim's Way community bulletin board inside the bookstore for your convenience. Support independence. Come in and pick up a free KRXA bumper sticker. We're on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in downtown Carmel.
Or give us a call at 624-4955.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale with 2 hours of talk radio all about our daily challenges, our fears, changes, crisis, addictions. Over 1,700 of them, can you believe it? Using the 12 steps, the law of attraction, whatever it takes. Join me Saturday afternoons 3 to 5 with my guests and we'll find solutions together. The Sheila Show, Saturday 3 to 5 on KRXA, brought to you by Benji's Princess Monterey Whale Watching Trips. Open daily on Old Fisherman's Wharf, Monterey.
Fritti di Mar Grill in Marina is a delicious haven for lovers of Italian seafood, pasta, and salads at neighborly prices. Owners Tito and Sonia Perez invite you to their new restaurant, Fritti di Mar Grill, for lunch or dinner weekdays and on Saturdays from 4 p.m. Every tasty meal comes with generous portions of Salvadoran warmth. Fritti di Mar Grill is at 3056 Del Monte Boulevard in Friendly Marina. Browse to FrittiDiMarGrill.com or call 384-8525.
Checking traffic on KRXA. Looks like we have an accident in Santa Cruz County. Southbound Highway 1 just before Morrissey Boulevard. It's on the right shoulder, and there's about two cars involved. In Salinas, Highway 68 eastbound at Torero Drive, there is an accident involving a couple cars. And it might be hazardous for those drivers in the eastbound lanes. It's not blocking, but it may be partially, sort of in that lane. And a tow truck is en route right now, so hopefully that'll be moved out of the way soon. Santa Cruz, we got road construction on Emmeline Avenue undercrossing. It's closed as it passes under Highway 1 from Fernside Street to Lee Street for concrete finish work. That's going to be going on through Thursday. And, of course, Highway 1 closed down in both directions at Nepenthe from the Big Sur fire. Traffic is brought to you by Parrot Hands-Free Car Kits. Positive Parrot reminds you that as of July 1st, California law requires drivers to use a hands-free device for making calls. Get a Parrot instead of a ticket. Check out the complete line of Parrot Hands-Free Car Kits at Parrot.com. I'm Kimmy Klein, and that's traffic on KRXA.
Collins Show rolls on this Monday. Thanks for joining us here. 888-5 Peter B is my toll-free number. There's room on the switchboard for your call. So comment on these Supreme Court decisions or anything else that you think the public wants to hear about. 888-573-8372. And up next, we got Drew in Monterey. Welcome, Drew. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. Good to talk to you. I am agreeing with you on the exorbitant cost of people sitting on death row, but I think we come to a different conclusions. You quoted a figure of $174,000 per year to keep one inmate on death row. Did I hear you correctly?
Yearly, there's a chart here. It says yearly per inmate costs above permanent imprisonment. So that's the gap over the annual cost now, according to Mother Jones magazine, is almost $50,000 a year per inmate. And the cost of a death row inmate is an additional $174,000.
Now, I'm figuring that number is actually probably low, because if you figure the cost of attorneys for appeals, they get appeals on their case every certain number of years. They have constant contact with attorneys that are typically paid for by taxpayers.
Right. Some of those are calculated into this, because the breakdown for the $174,000 includes the Supreme Court, the Attorney General, the State Public Defender, and the Habeas Corpus Resource Center. And you're correct. Those are funded by the taxpayers.
Yeah. So it's disgusting.
Drew, my guess,
like you said, is that we need to stop putting people in jail for nonviolent crimes. And I would like to advocate that I think that absolutely includes, I'm not in favor of drug use, but somebody getting thrown in jail for years at a time for having, marijuana or a little bit of cocaine or something like that, that's not productive, man.
Well, I agree with you there, Drew. You're turning into a libertarian before my ears.
Now, I've been a libertarian with conservative leanings is all.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Now, do I properly infer that your resolution of the cost of death row is to speed up the process and limit their appeals?
Yeah, unfortunately, that is what, with the DNA evidence that we have, we're able to pretty much accurately tie certain people to certain crimes, in a lot of cases beyond the shadow of a doubt, and for horrifically violent crimes, I don't think people should get to sit on death row for 25 years. I'd say 5 years, they get a couple of appeals, and that's it. That's all they get.
All right. I understand your sentiment there, but let me just flip it. There are six people who've been released from death row in California in the last 20 years, and most of that is due to DNA evidence that proved they were innocent. And
Correct. Given
that, the process for trying somebody under a death penalty potential is much more expensive, elaborate, and time-consuming than a general, criminal prosecution. You would imagine that we would have had a much higher rate of accuracy. But to have six people freed, again, primarily due to DNA evidence, I think challenges the argument that you're making.
That is my argument, Peter, is because we have DNA evidence now, people that are convicted based on DNA evidence are relatively clearly guilty of their crime, and if their crime constitutes the death penalty, don't let it string out for 25 years.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I understand your point of view. We disagree, but I appreciate your comments. Always good to hear from you, Drew.
Thanks.
All right. Good to talk to you. And on line two, it's Mike in Eureka. Hi, it's Peter B. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, Peter. I just had a question for you. What was your chief complaint regarding the death penalty? Because you seem to have strong arguments and opinions against it, and
Yeah. You
talk about the rationale of society. Well, I mean, this country has the highest incarceration rate in the entire world, and I understand that, part of that is because of some of the reformations that need to come about and catch laws up to times, but I also think that in the, to maintain control, you need to be able to execute people.
Well, Mike, we just disagree. I fundamentally don't believe that a society like ours should embrace a barbaric tactic like this. And I also think, as I was just talking with Drew, that because mistakes are made, even in the DNA era,
I'm not comfortable putting people to death, even when you think it is a slam dunk case and that there, you know, are no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I think that ultimately we pay a price for state-sponsored killing, and I think it leads to a devaluation of life. And kind of a TV mentality that, you know, you see something and you want to push that remote and have it taken care of. And things are not that simple. They're much more complicated. No two cases are alike. And so, yeah, fundamentally, I am opposed to capital punishment.
Okay. Well, I mean, I understand what you're saying. Yeah, you're right. I definitely don't agree with you. And I think that a lot of you mentioned the barbaric tactic of capital punishment. Some of the things these people do are pretty barbaric themselves, and it should be punished in a manner that, you know, rectifies what they did.
Okay.
Let them possibly free on technicality, or to house them in an incarcerated facility for years and years, cost to the taxpayers and the government. It just doesn't seem like a feasible solution.
All right, Mike, that's your opinion. I've never been willing to put myself in the godlike position to decide that somebody else could live or die. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Socalo Restaurant in Pacific Grove is the place to go when you're looking for ultra-authentic Mexican food. From our handmade tortillas to our delicious Angus skirt steak, Socalo does it right. You won't find canned tomatoes, frozen meat, or pre-made items at Socalo. Everything is made here. We proudly use only Angus beef. Some of our specialty items include pozole, chicken mole, handmade sopes, and the only handmade flour tortilla on the peninsula. We feature seafood items like wild salmon, ceviche, and numerous shrimp and fish dishes. If you're looking for fresh and authentic Mexican food, Socalo is the place to go. Socalo is located at 162 Fountain Avenue in Pacific Grove. Our phone number is 373-7911. Catering and food to go is also available. Socalo Restaurant at 162 Fountain Avenue, Pacific Grove is the place to go for quality, authentic Mexican food. Call 373-7911 for takeout or reservations. Socalo will also be opening soon in downtown Salinas. Look for us.
Installing new transmitter, 50,000 cool ones. Operating the finest talk radio station west of the Gavilan Mountains. Priceless. KRXA 540. Think for yourself. Sofas, dinette sets, mattresses, and more. If you have a home furnishing need, we're the place you need to be. So come on down to your friendly town of Marina and visit us. Furniture Outlet, 3056 Del Monte Boulevard in Marina.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays, 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
We all have those questions, don't we, in our life? Questions about our living. It would be wise of us to be patient towards all that is unresolved in our heart and try to love the questions themselves. Too often we seek answers that can't be given to us because we would not be able to truly live them. And the point is, in this life, to live everything. to live the questions now, and perhaps gradually, without ever noticing it, we live along some distant day into the answer. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and I invite you to be with me for my radio program on Saturday and Sundays at 9 a.m. here on KRXA. I hope you will take the time to join me and to aspire to your heart.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Yeah, Barry Obama and Hillary Rodham Clinton had a love fest in Unity, New Hampshire, Friday. Has the sweetness affected everyone? Well, in a moment, we're going to meet Will Bauer, one of many Democrats who says, I can't vote for Barack Obama. And I might just vote for John McCain.
Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends?
And we'll get to Will in just a moment, but Ray is calling from Santa Cruz on our topic from just a few minutes ago about the Supreme Court decision on gun issues. Welcome, Ray.
Thank you. My question to you is, are you for gun control across the board? Are you for not allowing people to have guns, or what was the argument?
I'm a practical guy, Ray. Yeah. There are 250 plus million guns in this country, and there's no way that I can round them up either by using the law and punishment, or you know, rewards and benefits.
Yeah,
and so I accept that no law is really going to change that reality.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is that I believe that the Second Amendment did not confer a right on individuals. And I believe court is a group of activist judges that is legislating from the bench in a conservative direction.
Yeah, you're right. Well, at the time that the country was formed, there was a militia, so
yeah.
It said the right to bear arms, for a militia. I'm not sure about that, though. I think it would be bad I think people should have the right to have guns because, you know, it's been proven that people, you know, that have guns can prevent situations from happening. Like, for instance, if the right people would have had the guns, to defend themselves at the killings that happened at the university, I'm trying to think, Virginia Tech.
Oh, Ray.
Yeah.
Ray. Come on. That is such a specious. That's a Ted Nugent argument. You agree with Ted Nugent?
Well.
You want to arm every teacher in America?
Well, I think people should have the right to defend themselves. That's what I'm saying.
At all times, in public places.
Peter, if somebody comes in, breaks into your house, and it's got a, is going to blow you away, what are you going to do? Are you going to be, what are you going to do?
Ray, let me take your 24 example here, all right? Let's say tonight I bust into your house, all right? I'm awake, I'm alert. I'm ready to steal your money, your flat-screen TV, or whatever my nefarious deed is, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And I wake you up at 2 o'clock in the morning, and you got one of those Nancy Reagan itty-bitty pistols under your pillow or in the nightstand.
Right.
You're going to die, brother, because I've got the advantage over you. I'm awake, I'm alert, I know what I'm doing, and I've got my gun pointed at you when I enter the room. And the safest thing that can happen is for you to put up no resistance.
Well, I'm not sure about that. See, I remember years ago when Marvin Speck killed the 8 nurses back in Chicago. I remember that. Now, what I'm
saying is, if
8 nurses would have had a gun with them, they might have had a chance. They might have had a chance.
Yeah, but no, you're trying to rewrite history, Ray.
Well,
As I recall the crime, I think Richard Speck, you know, tied those people up before he killed them.
Well, I know he did, but what I'm saying is that if you don't have a chance, if somebody, you know, at least you have a chance to defend yourself. I think it would be terribly wrong for people to eliminate handguns. You know, because people need to defend themselves if something like that happens.
Ray, I respect your position.
Yeah.
I don't agree with you.
I know you don't agree. But
when handguns are in the home, they are most likely to be used by one family member on another or in a suicide.
Well,
the rate of guns being used in home defense is far below homicide and suicide.
You're
watching too much TV, brother. Hey, Ray, I got to jump here. I got a full switchboard. Call me back another time and we'll talk, okay?
Yeah, bye.
I appreciate it. Now let's talk to Will Bauer. He's in Washington, D.C., and his name was on a media alert that I received earlier today. And he is a Senator Clinton supporter. And I have a statement here from his group that I'll read just as an opener here. We will not support Senator Obama now or on November 4th, 2008. Senator Clinton's vote is her own. Our votes are our own, and they will not be cast for Senator Obama. The Just Say No Deal Coalition members will still either choose to stay home and protest, write in Senator Clinton's name, or vote for Senator John McCain. Our votes are our voices, and Just Say No Deal's voices are over 2 million strong and growing. And by the way, we say H-O-U-N-D. Heck, Obama's unqualified, no deal. Will, welcome to the program today.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Now, tell me why you are so hardened in your support for Hillary Clinton that you would consider voting for John McCain this fall.
Well, there are a couple of misconceptions there that I'd like to clarify. Firstly, that not all of us started out as Hillary Clinton supporters. A lot of us back in January were Biden supporters and Kucinich supporters and Richardson supporters. And yes, by the time that May and June rolled around, most of them were on Hillary's bandwagon. But it's not all about Hillary Clinton. It's about other things than that. And the other thing to clarify is that not all of us are going to vote for John McCain necessarily. I personally, what I originally said to the press a few weeks ago was that if when we get to November I have to choose between Barack Obama and John McCain, I will choose John McCain. Personally, I still see avenues for Hillary to get the nomination, and if there are things I can do to make that happen, I will do that first.
All right. What are those avenues?
Well, delegates and superdelegates. And, you know, there's still a convention to be held, and, you know, a lot of people are wanting to say that it's over and that it's already a coronation. He's still a presumptive nominee and things can happen. And I'm not talking about outlandish things like, you know, the RFK hubbub from a few months ago. I'm talking about scandals or proven incompetencies or, you know, we still don't really know much about Barack Obama. And there are things, you know, his campaign could implode before August, or delegates and superdelegates could change their minds. So if those things were to happen, I would fully be back on the Democratic bandwagon, and then I wouldn't be talking about John McCain as an option.
Okay, so what are these defining differences between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama? Because I appreciate the qualifiers you added there, Will. My first candidate was Dennis Kucinich, and then I pragmatically said, okay, John Edwards has a better shot. And then Edwards pulled out a week before the California primary. And so, Obama was not my first choice, but I've always, just being honest with you, I've always preferred him over Hillary Clinton for a variety of reasons. But from your perspective, what are these critical differences between Obama and Clinton that would cause you to consider voting for McCain?
Well, firstly, yes, there are similarities in their platforms. I would argue that they're not as identical as a lot of people would suggest when we talk about healthcare and when we talk about mortgages and we talk about gas taxes. There are significant differences, but I'll grant you that by and large, Hillary and Barack are a lot closer than Hillary and McCain. What I say is that there are issues that are much bigger than even that, and I would say the democratic process itself. I mean, back in 2000, we had the Supreme Court choose our president for us,
right,
and we had no power to do anything about it. But this time, November isn't here yet, and we've seen basically within the Democratic Party, what I would argue is an intra-party coup. And we can say no to that, and that's what we're doing. We won't accept this anti-democratic trend that we've seen this country going down, the path of.
So what part of this is anti-democratic? Is this over Florida and Michigan?
Well, yes, that's a large part of it. And I really, you know, I wish we had time to talk more fully about Florida and Michigan, because anyone who says or thinks that Florida and Michigan were simply two states that were wanting, you know, unfair advantage and getting out of line and speaking out of term, they don't really know the history of Florida and Michigan.
Well, Florida and Michigan should have granted
waivers by the DNC, and they should have been able to have their full vote counted. And I would love to talk more about that if, you know, whenever you have the time.
All right, but Will, can't we agree that the rules were in place before the first vote was cast?
Well, then I have to go into this, and I'll tell you that the DNC has been choosing which rules to apply to which states. All right, I don't want to bore your listeners, but here's the story about Michigan as quickly as I can make it. Michigan applied to be one of the first four window states. That was a discussion within the DNC that there would be four instead of two initial states. And everyone made an agreement. There are other states that also agreed to this. And they decided, Michigan, no, you will not be one of the first four states. And Michigan agreed. And the thing that everyone agreed on was that New Hampshire would go fourth after three caucus states. It would be Iowa, South Carolina, Nevada as caucus states. Mm-hmm. And then New Hampshire would go. So once this agreement was made, Michigan said, all right, we agree. We will not pledge to be one of the first four states. Well, after this was agreed upon, New Hampshire said, you know what? We want to be second anyway. We are going to break this agreement that we made with you, and we're going to be second anyway. So they jumped over South Carolina and Iowa, went back into second place against the agreement that Michigan agreed to, and Michigan, you know, the DNC said, all right, you know, New Hampshire, we don't want to anger you or your voters, so we're going to grant you a waiver. Well, when Michigan saw them get a waiver, it was like, whoa, wait a minute. We stepped out of this process because we agreed with you. We agreed with what you came up with, and now you're breaking it?
All right, we're going to move forward, too. Will, I don't dispute that history, but on the day when votes were cast in Michigan, Obama's name was not on the ballot. But when the DNC, met in May, I don't believe they could have, you know, rewritten the rules to, you know, force Obama onto the ballot when he wasn't on the ballot when people voted. A rerun of the election would have been the fairest way to do it, and for a variety of reasons, that didn't happen. So,
there are so many things to address here, and I don't know where to begin. You're right. What you're saying, a lot of it is true. Firstly, I'll say that only one person truly stood in the way of a Michigan revote, and that was Barack Obama. All he had to do was go to a microphone and say once, let's have a revote in Michigan, and it would have happened, and he never did that.
Well, but wait. Granholm, the governor, she was the one who ruled it out.
Only after Barack Obama didn't get on board. I think if he had been on board a lot sooner, she would have backed it up. But without Barack Obama saying yes for her, what was Granholm supposed to do?
That's pretty speculative. So,
you're right, but let me say more. There's a lot more about Michigan. For example, there's always been, in our history,
It's
for situations like this.
Hey,
and
Will.
Barack Obama's grassroots people in Michigan told all of his supporters vote
uncommitted. Hey, Will. Will, I think you've been trained for the Bill O'Reilly show.
Okay.
I don't have enough time to really go into this detail, and we've got to take a break. I want to take a phone call of somebody who wants to talk to you. But,
okay.
You know, fundamentally, I don't believe that there is any benefit in rehashing those matters. And I don't think I don't think that there is a mechanism other than the convention. And you are well within your rights, and all Hillary Clinton supporters are in their rights to maintain their loyalties to her and go to the convention and take your best shot. I agree with you that Obama has not won this until the convention confers the nomination on him. And I think that that is a realistic place for you to put your efforts. But I would like to see you say, I will fight for Hillary till the last day of the convention, and then I will support the Democratic nominee. And the reason is that I was willing to do the reverse. And I have a lot of historic reasons for opposing Hillary Clinton, okay? I feel very strongly about it. But if she were the Democratic nominee, if she becomes the Democratic nominee through the process you hope for, I will vote for her in November. Why won't you say the same about Obama?
Because how Obama's gotten the nomination.
Okay, let me take the break. We'll return and talk more. This is fascinating, and I welcome your phone calls if you'd like to engage with our guest, Will Bauer. Tell me what you think about continuing to support Hillary Clinton and in what manner you express that. And does it lead you to say, I could vote for John McCain? That, to me, is the ultimate definer here. 888-5-PETER-B. Their line's open, 888-573-8372. The Peter B. Collins Show.
Checking traffic on KRXA starting in Scotts Valley in Santa Cruz Mountain. Southbound 17 just after Mount Hermon Road. We've got an accident involving a motorcycle. The motorcycle's down. It's blocking the southbound lanes, but it looks like it's just minor injuries because he's standing up and walking around. But emergency crews are on their way, and CHP is on the scene. Again, it's blocking the southbound lanes of 17 just after Mount Hermon Road. In Santa Clara County, eastbound 152 after 156, two cars on the shoulder. Camporia Gloria Road at US 101, we got a stalled big rig in the roadway. And in Morgan Hill, southbound 101, just after San Martin Ave, an accident on the right shoulder there, a couple cars. Also, southbound 1 before Morrissey, we had an earlier accident, but that's now cleared. And, of course, Highway 1 shut down for the Big Sur fire in both directions just after Nepenthe. This traffic report brought to you by Carfax. Do you know what happens to a car on fire? That heat destroys electrical and safety systems. Find out about fire damage. Ask your used car dealer for a free Carfax vehicle history report or go to Carfax.com. I'm Kimmy Klein, and that's traffic on KRXA.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family-owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With a high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Reminds you to please drink responsibly.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. To experience one-of-a-kind dishes, don't forget the weekly specials. The Mexicali Grill is open Monday through Saturday for lunch until 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following The Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show. Weekdays, 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Loyal online listeners who had his vote taken away from him, Russell in Royal Oaks, Michigan. And we continue with Will Bauer. And we're talking about Democrats who don't support Barack Obama and would prefer to support Hillary Clinton. And I'm trying not to put words in your mouth, Will, but as you explained, your group is not just diehard Hillary supporters, but others who are unhappy with the process the Democratic Party used this year. And I have to say, I've got my own complaints, particularly the way Dennis Kucinich and Mike Gravel were excluded or marginalized in the debates, and that none of the top-tier candidates came to their defense. That's something I'd like to see changed. Let's go to Nick in Santa Cruz. Nick, thanks for calling the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hey, Peter, Mr. Bauer.
Hello.
Mr. Bauer, this is the second time I've heard you on the radio today. And both times, it seems like your main problem is with the DNC.
And I agree with you.
One of the things that I'm not understanding is you're willing to not vote for somebody that matches up 99% with your candidate, even if they're the way they choose to handle things might be a little different.
Well, and even if it's only
85%. You're blanketing right now saying that you will not vote for this person, and you will vote for John McCain or somebody else, which makes absolutely no sense if you actually want our country to go in the right direction.
Well, firstly, I would say that at this stage, Barack Obama represents the DNC. The two of them are now synonymous. So
and how is that?
The only way I can vote against the DNC is by voting Barack Obama.
Will, how do you make that leap?
Yeah. What do you think?
How do I make that leap? I believe that this was a pre-wired selection process. I think the DNC knew who they wanted to be their candidate going into this.
So you think the Rules Committee was in the tank for Obama?
Yes.
All right.
As simple about it as I can be, yes, I do.
Okay, go ahead.
Wait, Nick, we can't both.
But Nick can't right now.
Okay.
All right, we'll address Nick's other point, which is...
Well, the other point is on the policy issues.
Yeah.
And there are two things I would say to that. Firstly, I don't feel that we really know Barack Obama's policy issues. While he was campaigning against Hillary... Yes, it seemed like their platforms were identical, but as soon as he starts campaigning against McCain, he's taken such a drastic turn to the right that we are even now seeing former Obama supporters becoming Pumas, especially because of campaign finance. So many of his ardent supporters at the very beginning of his campaign were so because he pledged he would use the public avenues for financing his campaign. And as soon as he got the nomination, he said, oh, changed my mind on that. And that really has irked some of his early supporters, and we're seeing Pumas that fall into that category.
And tell us what Puma stands for.
Well, there are two definitions. The original, the one that has the folk weight behind it, is Party Unity My Ass.
Okay.
And there have been a few other Puma groups who have popped up who want to be able to take our movement into the boardroom and put a suit and tie on it, and they call themselves People United Means Action. And we're on the same page. We're friends. It's fine. You know, we accept both of those anagrams.
Mm-hmm.
But, I am representing Party Unity My Ass.
Okay. Nick, anything else you want to add?
I just can't believe that that's what you came back with. The campaign finance was...
Oh, but there's
so that's
more,
your
there's
overwhelming
more.
Decision than to push it over the top. I just don't understand where you're coming from. I mean, McCain is so, so far off. From anything
you know what I have to say about McCain is 4 years ago he was John Kerry's first choice for vice president.
Wait, gentlemen, both of your weight. That is not true. Will.
It might have been a media stunt, but there was a week where John Kerry was going on the trail saying, "I would love to have John McCain as the vice president."
That was a feint. It was a feint.
I'm not arguing that, but John Kerry was willing to put his reputation on the line by associating himself with the possibility of having...
No. John Kerry was making, I think, a very weak, pandering effort to appeal to some independent and hopefully some disaffected Republican voters. But I don't think he was serious about that. Will, I want to come back because I want to share some of my disappointments with Barack Obama, okay? I'm very disappointed that he supported the Supreme Court's Second Amendment, the gun decision last week. I'm very disappointed that he is criticizing criticizing the court for overturning the death penalty in Louisiana, because I actually agree with the court's decision on that. But none of these can move me. I want to agitate against Obama. I want to push him to take a strong stand on FISA and defeat the amnesty for the telephone companies. There are a lot of issues where I feel passionately, and I know he's going to come up short. But none of that can put me into a position where I would say I would waste my vote on John McCain. I am not that petulant.
Okay, well, there are three things. First of all, again, many of us are not in that place yet either where we can say we will support McCain. Secondly, I would say that, you know, the Puma movement, if all goes well, is not going to die on November 4th, and we will be there to fight more fights. The Puma movement is filled with activists and women and feminists, people who have been diehard Democrats their whole lives. I mean, we're going to keep fighting the good fight when and where we can. And I would say in terms of John McCain, yes, a lot of us don't want to pull the lever for him, but we feel we have to. We realize that there will be a price, and we're prepared for that because we're looking at a much bigger picture. And we feel that this is, you know, a bullet that we have to bite for the greater good, and that we still have avenues to our advantage. We have a Democratic Congress, and we can legislate the ways that the Supreme Court has to regulate that, recognize that legislation. So it's not like John McCain will be the death of our country. We're going to keep fighting for the good cause after November 4th.
Well, Will, I sharply disagree with you on that final point. To continue Republican rule would be the most reckless thing that America could do at this time. And while you have some legitimate complaints about the process, and we all have bruises that have brought us to this point, but I believe we got to focus on ending Republican rule. That's job one. You got 5 seconds.
Republican rule has already ended. I think they've spent the last 6 years dismantling themselves completely in their...
No, we got to deliver the coup de grace. Will, we'll talk again. Thanks for a lively conversation. Will Bauer, here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Thanks for joining us today. We'll do this again tomorrow. Meet me then.
Until then.
We're talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company, which offers more than 60 different wines made with certified organic grapes. Veronique, French wines are intimidating for some American consumers. Mm-hmm. How do you help break it down for us?
Don't be intimidated. What is there to be intimidated about? There's nothing too exotic about them. You either like them or you don't like them. You know, it's really simple. You either like Van Gogh or you don't. You either like the Beatles or you don't. You know, wines are really a form of a vibration in a bottle, just like poetry, just like music. And you know the style of music that you like. So maybe you're going to love French wines. And then go for it.
Learn more about the Organic Wine Company on the web at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE toll-free. That's 1-888-ECO-WINE. Tell them Peter B. sent you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Another milestone for gasoline prices.
34 states and the District of Columbia are at or above $4 a gallon.
Troy Green of AAA pegs the national average for regular at $4.09 and predicts 4th of July holiday travel will be down for the first time this decade. Falling sales of large vehicles prompted an announcement from Chrysler today that a Missouri minivan plant will close, and a nearby plant that makes large pickups will go from two shifts to one. With the price of crude oil at $140 a barrel, the Iraqi government has decided it needs outside help to get more of its oil out of the ground. CBS News correspondent Elizabeth Palmer reports.
Iraq has decided to invite foreign, including U.S. oil companies, back in. Ali says what many believe, that America invaded his country for oil, and now U.S. companies are taking control. Not so, said Hussein Sharastani, the oil minister, in an exclusive interview with CBS News.
What kind of pressure have you been under from the United States?
This may surprise you and your audience. None.
Even with foreign help, though, Iraq will only be pumping an extra 2 million barrels a day by 2013. Not enough to ease the squeeze now for consumers at the pump. Elizabeth Palmer, CBS News, Baghdad.
President Bush today signed the final war funding bill of his tenure, $162 billion to keep troops in Iraq and Afghanistan.
I appreciate that Republicans and Democrats in Congress
agreed to provide these vital funds without tying the hands of our commanders and without an artificial timetable of withdrawal from Iraq.
Afghanistan has become more dangerous. For the second straight month, more U.S. and NATO troops have been killed there than in Iraq. American commanders are frustrated because Pakistan has failed to rout al-Qaeda and the Taliban from their safe havens along the border. In California, a spokesman for the U.S. Forest Service says they have to pick their battles. They're choosing which wildfires to fight and which to let burn. They're battling the flames that threaten the scenic coastal town of Big Sur. CBS News correspondent John Blackstone describes the scene.
I'm at a restaurant called Nepenthe, a famous place along the Big Sur coast. Usually from here you have a view 50 or 60 miles down spectacular.